This week, the internet speculates that Nintendo copied the copiers by selling ROMs downloaded from the internet for its virtual console games. But if owning a game means you can download a ROM, doesn't that also extend to the rights holder? And that's just one of many stories coming up right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Orange Lounge Radio.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet, and welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio. Live tonight, episode number 673 for this January the 22nd of 2017. My name is Rob Roberts, joining you in lovely Studio N7 in Sacramento, California. Not joining us tonight, unfortunately, Dark Sakura, or Jamie Summers. She has a little bit of a sinus infection type thing, and it also is kind of stormy outside, like thunder, lightning, the whole works. So she didn't feel up to the trip out here tonight, because it does take her a good 20, 30 minutes to get over here. So she will, however, call us later in the show to do her regular segment, the classic system of the month this week. So we'll check in with her at that time. But we do have in studio, as he is every week, say hello to Techmaster Loki.
Now, is the classic system of the month?
Loki with no mic on. Did I not unmute it? How did I do that? Try again, Loki.
I did not unmute me.
Live radio, the joys and tribulations.
Anyways, as I was going to say, is the classic system of the week going to be the Nintendo serial system?
I don't know. I think I'm safe to say it's not tonight, because I may be privy to insider information on what she's picked in advance. It is not the Nintendo serial system, but she may pick that in a future month. It is for breakfast now. It's a cereal. Wow. How are you, Loki?
I'm fine.
Yeah?
I have a pizza I'm eating.
Yeah, and that's always a good thing. It's funny, because Loki brought in a pizza to the studio tonight, and I was saying, oh, Alan and I were actually thinking about ordering pizza, because we're kind of lazy right now, tonight. And, you know, it's that whole situation where you're kind of, like, out of food. So you're like, I don't really want to go grocery shopping today, especially when it's stormy. Can I get through one more night with just a pizza? All right. Us here in studio, but you guys, of course, as always, in our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com, where we do tape live every Sunday night at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show at the Voice of Geeks Network, vognetwork.com. Like I said, it is stormy outside tonight, a little bit of rainy. So if you were going to bootleg the show any week, I would encourage you to do it tonight. In fact, I think Tiger Claw is on standby, just in case we have a power outage or something like that. However, Flocko Jones isn't here, so that should be good as far as the power outage is concerned.
Yes.
All right. Anyway, so there are some folks in chat over at live.vognetwork.com that are talking about something I haven't talked about on the show tonight, and I didn't talk about in the show in advance, but so y'all may have heard on Twitter and throughout the interwebs this week, I got married on Thursday. Yep. Alan and I made it official, and we went down and had a good old courthouse wedding on Thursday. As some people have phrased it, which I guess we have too, we eloped, although that's a weird... Usually when you say you elope, you're eloping because maybe like your parents disapprove or something like that, or you're trying to get away from something. I don't know. I guess every situation is different, right? But elope feels weird to me, because the only people that we actually invited to the ceremony were my parents. And that was because we had to have a witness of some sort. So I was like, all right, we're going to invite my parents. Alan's mother passed away many years ago. So we had them there, but we didn't tell any friends or any other family. Like, he didn't tell his brothers. I didn't tell my sister. We didn't tell really anybody else until it was done. And I think part of that was because, well, I guess if we eloped from everybody, from anybody, we eloped from the government, because the whole thing was planned. I'm going to be, you know, you guys know I don't like to get too political on this show, and I'm just going to tell you the facts and how it is. We made a decision the day after the election that we would get married the day before the inauguration, as it is our belief. And wouldn't it be lovely if we get proved wrong? But it is our belief that there's some in this incoming administration, especially the vice president, that would try to take this right away of same-sex marriage if they're given the choice. And also, you have to consider that Prop 8 was passed in California, and Prop 8 technically is still the law in California, which sucks. And I think if that were to go again, I feel like having been doing this show, having talked to many people out there, having seen people in my own life kind of come full circle in the past 8 years, which we kind of saw with our last president, right? A lot of the reason why Prop 8 passed in the first place, some claim, is because our last president, President Barack Obama, was on record on a recording saying, I believe marriage should be between a man and a woman. Well, in those 8 years, he certainly evolved and I think was probably the best champion of LGBT plus rights that we've ever had in the Oval Office. So that part's awesome. And I think a lot of people kind of came around with him. So I think if Prop 8 were to happen again, it would be very different, which is great. That type of progression is awesome. But the reality is, if the Supreme Court were to strike it down, Prop 8's still going to be the law. So you know what? And it's one of those things. And I realize y'all have your own opinions, I'm sure. Although, you know, the relationship between Alan and I is not really your concern at the end of the day. But we said, you know what, this is what we want to do. This is a symbolic thing. We're going to get married and do it here, and that's it. I mean, and you know, a lot of people have been asking me in the past couple of days, like, does it feel different now that you're married? And my honest answer is not really. Alan and I have been living together for the past 5 years anyway. So maybe there'll be more of those subtle changes later on, especially like when we file our taxes next year and things like that. But the reason why I say it that way, and I can kind of laugh about it, is because, like, honestly, this was just a logical next step progression in our relationship that we've both known has been coming for a very long time. And so it was one of those things where we're just going to do it right now. So there it is. So I'm married to Alan, and that happened just days ago. Loki, let me ask you, because I get this question a lot. What did marriage change things for you? Because you and Nelly were together a while before you guys tied the knot, right? And what have things changed for the two of you?
You just can't leave anymore.
I don't know if that's true. All right. Let's see, going to our chat over at live.vognetwork.com. Thank you. I see a lot of people saying congratulations, and I really appreciate that. Thank you guys so much. Let's see, JD says, I call mine an elopement, courthouse wedding, no witnesses, etc. See, we did have a witness, and it was a family member, so I don't know. Does that still apply? I don't know. I think I'm thinking too much about terms where I don't need to be. Let's see. SSG100 Matt says, it's too bad you didn't do it earlier. I think you could have gotten a signed letter from Obama congratulating you. I didn't even know that was a thing you could do. Well, Obama's just a private citizen now. Do you think if I sent him a letter and asked very nicely, I could still get something? Maybe? I don't know. It's not a high priority for us. It's fine. Let's see. And SSG100 Matt says, we may all have differences, but we can all agree that we're all happy for you and Alan. That's very sweet of you to say, and that's honestly some of the best wishes I could look for. Thank you very much. I really, really appreciate that. So there you go. Yes, I know it's a gaming show, you guys, but in a 3-hour show, sometimes you get the updates on our personal lives, and that was a pretty big one for me. So there you have it. And you know, Alan, you guys know him because he pops on the show every now and again. He might pop on tonight. We'll see. But you know, part of the reason why Alan and I click so well is because he's a big fucking nerd like I am, and he plays a lot of video games, although he's more a computer gamer guy. I think in the whole times we've lived together, I don't see him pick up a console game very often at all, unless we're doing like Jackbox Party Pack. Like, I think that's the console game I can sometimes. He'll watch me play. I was playing World of Final Fantasy in the past week, and he'll come in, watch me play the game. He'll like ask a few questions about it, and then he'll kind of make fun of it, which World of Final Fantasy kind of lends itself very well to being made fun of, because there's like so many anime tropes in that game, and there's like it's really like over the top ridiculous in some parts. So he'll be like, you know, oh, are you playing Chibi Final Fantasy Desu Desu World of Chibi Fart? You know, like just, you know, make up something on the spot there, and you know. So we bond a lot over games, like a game that Alan plays a lot of. In fact, he's probably playing it right now if he's listening to the show in the other room. I know he was playing it before the show. Is Overwatch? He plays a lot. He just hit, I think, level 231 or something like that on PC, and that's a lot of Overwatch time, right? And I like Overwatch. I do think Overwatch was like the best video game that was released last year, in a lot of ways, but. Like, I probably wouldn't play Overwatch as much as I do if Alan didn't kind of like motivate me to do that. So it's like something we kind of do together. And as much as it can be frustrating sometimes that we'll get matched with really good players because of his skill rating as opposed to mine, like I do feel like I've learned a lot more about the game and I have gotten better playing games with him. So there's that. All right. I'll stop being sweet and over the top and all that stuff. SSGO100 Matt in chat wants to offer different congratulations here. SSGO100 Matt says, congrats, Bobby. His team is going to the Superb Owl. That's right. That is absolutely right. Bobby did not do a live show tonight because you guys all know he has this other gig that he does that involves a football team in his area. And said football team is now going to be going to the Super Bowl. So I have to check my Facebook because I actually asked him, does this mean you get to play at the Lady Gaga concert in 2 weeks? Because I don't know if they get to go to the Superb Owl or any of that stuff. So we'll see. We will find out. I'm sure he will update you all on his show next week. Let's see. SSJ100 Matt says, I saw you bought Overwatch on console recently, Rob. Yes, that is true. It wasn't actually that recent, though. I bought it during a sale, I think Black Friday or something like that. VidPower says, wow, that's two Overwatch prestiges. Yep. he plays a lot of Overwatch. ActDef says, drunk Black Wolf to call OLR. Maybe. I'm sure he's in a very celebratory mood, but I don't think Black Wolf will be calling tonight. He's probably really tired from the day. But you know who is calling in tonight? We have an interview coming up in about 15 minutes. We're going to be talking with a buddy of mine he's done a lot of great like articles. You know, it's a neat tie-in tonight, and when he was willing to come on the show tonight, knowing in the back of my mind that, oh, I'm going to announce a gay wedding on air this week, I thought, oh, this is going to be the perfect guest for the show this week. It's my pal, Loki, aren't you excited? It's my pal, Matt Baum is going to be on the show. And he hosts several podcasts. He did a lot of like writing and YouTubes, especially, and articles about, you know, the marriage debate and all that when that was going on leading up to the Supreme Court ruling. And he still does a lot of that stuff, you know, just with those types of issues and what's going on in the LGBT+ community. But namely on tonight's show, we're going to talk to him about a project that he's doing that has a lot to do with video games. And I really like issues like this are really near and dear to my heart because I see myself in a lot of this. But the project he's going to talk to us about tonight is called Playing with Pride, and it's about LGBT+ gamers and a lot of what that community goes through. And, you know, a lot of times when you see an article or a tweet or something from something about like Gamer X, usually one of the responses in there is, why do we need a gay convention? When do we get a straight gaming convention? Where's that? You know, where's my straight pride parade and all that stuff? And I think the cool thing about this project is that I think Matt's really trying to show like why and answer that question. So even though you might be sitting there thinking, well, I'm not gay, am I going to be interested in this? I think this is a really good chance for you to see something from the other side. So anyway, I will stop talking about it and let Matt elaborate on that in about 15 minutes when he joins us live. But I do want to get into some gaming news right off the top of the show. I want to talk about the Switch. And obviously, we had a very passionate, lively discussion about some of the things that or everything that was announced with the Switch last week at the initial press conference and all that. But in the last 7 days, a lot more has come to light, right? We've seen there's more games that are getting confirmed for the Switch, right? Especially in the indie department. We saw we saw that screenshot with Cave Story and 1001 Spikes, right? We saw, you know, that. But one thing that caught my eye was that it's also come out from some interviews and some talking that there's not going to be a lot of media software out on the Switch. And that's a very vague way. They say not a lot of media software. Well, does that mean there's going to be like one software, or there's just straight up no software? And the impression I'm getting is don't expect Netflix on this thing, right?
That's incredibly dumb at this time.
It's interesting reading like the tweets that I'm getting, and I'm sure our chat room now when I turn around and look, a lot of the tweets that I'm seeing out there are about like, you know, well, I don't need Netflix on the Switch because I have 500 other devices that all have Netflix on it. And I get that. But at the same time, I can't help but go, well, okay, wait. For a couple things. A, Nintendo's trying to make this argument that this is a new home console. And isn't even though I, in my heart of hearts, believe this system is five times better when you view it as a new handheld console that just happens to get more powerful when you're at home, but I digress. Isn't it kind of standard for home consoles to be living room central hubs that have things like Netflix in them?
True, but you have to look at it the other way, that it's not Nintendo not putting it on their console, it's Netflix not developing for that console. So why aren't they doing it?
That's a good question.
Is it because they feel that, you know, it's obviously powerful enough to run it, because, you know, hell, a stupid tablet can run that. Could be that they just didn't get the dev kits out to them in time. It could be like a whole bunch of stuff. I just think the more I hear about their system, the less, like, I have a pre-order. I'm probably not going to have a pre-order by the time it comes out. It's still in my possession right now, but there's not, it's hardly anything convincing me to buy one right now.
Don't cancel until you're sure, because it'll be hard to get it back once you
do. I don't care, honestly. I mean,
I'm just saying.
What, one game that's coming out, Zelda, which I can get on the Wii U anyways, mm-hmm. which, by the way, they talked about what the differences are between the two systems. It's like, not really anything. I mean, so...
Well,
why?
Here, going back to Netflix for a minute, here's the thing for me, because even though as much as I, you know, I try to look at both sides of everything that's going on in gaming, I try to be fair, and I think I've given Nintendo a pretty fair shot on this show, and I have not canceled either of my pre-orders yet. Yes, I still have two, but that I do think this whole no Netflix thing is, I don't like it, and I know a lot of you disagree with me, and that's fine, but... it just seems like a real missed opportunity. That's what kind of worries me about it, is that it's a real missed opportunity for Nintendo, especially on a thing like the Switch, where it's like, okay, let's say you're watching Netflix on the TV or something, and then, oh, somebody wants to come in and take over the TV for something else, like news or whatever's going on, then snap, you can take that Switch out and continue to watch yourself on the couch with some headphones. Didn't they show that for the Wii U? I could swear when they were
the Wii U
plugging the Wii
that.
U, they showed that,
because
right?
It was the whole TV thing where you could, you know, you could take that and, you know, someone can watch TV on there and you can watch your whatever.
So that's what's bothering me about it, you guys. That's what's bothering me about it, is that it feels like it's a feature that was on the Wii U that's removed on the Switch.
Well,
that's where it's weird to
me. On top of that, like YouTube, like, mm-hmm. hell, my... son uses the Wii U tablet for Minecraft and mainly YouTube.
And you've talked about, too, for even yourself, as much as you know, you give Nintendo shit on the show sometimes, you love this thing for when your wife wants to commandeer the TV for Grey's Anatomy. You will use the Wii U gamepad to do stuff, right?
Not so much anymore now that I have the PlayStation VR, because I'll just play PlayStation 4 games on
that. Okay,
if I had a tablet for the PlayStation, yeah, I'd be down with that. But I mean, at one time, yeah, I was, when I was playing more like Wii U games. And hell, when, you know, Zelda comes out, that might be the case. But yeah, it's nice to be able to do that. It's just, I don't think their whole like online portion doesn't seem fleshed out at all. That's why it's not coming out right away, because it's not ready yet. There's nothing there. They have no details on anything. They don't know how much it's going to cost. They don't know what features are going to be in it. That's not good for a console that's coming out in less than 6 weeks. You don't have any idea what your online infrastructure is going to be. Come on.
And I do want to give a credit to these comments in chat right now. ActDeft over at live.vognetwork.com says, Netflix will be on the Switch, just give it time. VidPower says, Nintendo said it won't be available on launch, which means it may come in the future. And those are both valid and good points, but it still can't help you but feel like, wow, it feels like what we're getting in March is the beta release, and everything is going to be building up for holiday, which is when the console is really going to launch. And for all practical purposes, that may be exactly Nintendo's plan. And I think it is Nintendo's plan.
I think they're going to get another... it's going to pull another 3DS is what's going to happen with this system. They're going to launch it unprepared. It's not going to do great. It'll do fine because they've sold out of pre-orders, but it's not going to... you know, they're not going to sell a ton beyond that because there's not a lot of software out there. And how long, I mean, can Zelda really sustain your console? I mean, look at all the games coming out for it. And that's the other thing. Kind of like I stood back and I'm like, you know, look at all these games that are coming out for. All of these are ports of really old games. Like Mario Kart 8's a great game, but once again, it's just being re-released with just a fraction of a bit extra content. That should have been there in the first place.
Here's the thing. The Mario Kart 8 thing, where you and I totally differ on this, is that I'm looking ahead to the next nerd convention when everybody brings their Switch and we're all going to be sitting around playing Mario Kart 8 on our individual TV screens, kind of doing something in the same room that, like, it's an experience you can't really get on Wii U right now. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm really looking forward to in Mario Kart 8 for me personally. And I think Splatoon is going to be a lot of the same thing as well. And that could bode very well for other future Nintendo games, because obviously Nintendo's the party system,
right? And yeah, and that's
Mario
probably...
Party on the Switch is going to be lit.
But that's the problem, though. That's the problem. It is a party system, and that's... I don't party with people with my, you know, Wii or Wii U or whatever.
Why don't you want to party, Loki? Come on, Loki, let's party.
Mean, that's just making quite the assumption. Why? But still, even on top of that, though, you're basically putting out... like the game that was out just recently for that $60 price point still. And what am I really getting with that? Oh, the additional tracks? Big deal. You know, and why don't you just patch that shit into the Wii U version? Oh, I'm sorry, the Wii U can't handle traditional battle mode in fucking Mario Kart 8? That's ridiculous.
Only about 10% of our audience, give or take, is going to understand this joke, but I just think that Nintendo is really on a missed opportunity here to market the Switch as the official party and play system. And they're just not doing it. Well, who knows? Maybe for the holiday. Maybe the whole thing is get the early adopters in March so we have some good figures to push out for our financials so we don't get, you know, lose further stock faith or whatever. And then really we're going to push this during the holiday with a bundle with 1-2 Switch because that game ain't going to sell on its own.
I don't think the third party support's there, though. Now, like, we've been seeing stuff, but, like, what's EA got? EA's got FIFA. There's no Madden on there, which is a big deal. There's no...
Not yet. FIFA's there, though, which is bigger than Madden.
Yeah, but you know why FIFA's there? Because not until up to a couple years ago did they still stop... They basically are still producing the PlayStation 2 and... the Xbox 360, PlayStation 3 versions of those games. Because other parts of the world don't have a lot of market saturation for the newer consoles. That's not true for Madden. That's not true for NHL. That is true still for NBA 2K, I believe. But it's just... And even with that, though, those engines are still running on versions of the game that were, like, several years old. Pro Evo was doing that for a while with Konami. And all they were doing was roster updates running on the same engine. It was, like, from 2012. So I just... What's the thing is, they're providing support for the system, but very shitty-ass support for it. And, like, even Ubisoft, what are they really bringing to the system? Shit that came out already, they're just porting over to it. Like, Rayman? They're not developing a new Rayman game. It's just a fucking game that came out, the Wii U launch? You know, I mean, come on. This is piss-poor support from third parties.
The ports of years-old games is... concerning. I think indies can get away with it a little more than some of the big boys. But you guys know how I felt about the Skyrim thing. But there are others who strongly feel that Skyrim being a portable presence is going to be a huge asset.
But I want to see how that thing runs, because the thing I'm worried about is, first off, it's not going to be the new... I don't think it's going to be the remastered Skyrim. I think it could be just a port of, like, the Xbox 360, PlayStation 3 version. I mean, which would be okay, I guess, but... There's just, at this point, I mean, that sounds cool, but, like, I even thought about it, like, why would I drop $400 for the system in the game when I could just upgrade or buy a new laptop that can run Skyrim on the go anyways? And that's kind of what I'd be doing, you know, because wherever I go, I bring my laptop, and if I'm going to be playing, you know, games on the Switch, it's going to be at my desk at work. And I could just easily pop out a laptop and play with an Xbox 360 controller. So why... Why should I drop it for that? I mean, the Mario game looks all right, but I didn't buy the Mario game on the Wii U.
Let me go to chat for some more chat comments. Barb over in chat, my favorite character in Stranger Things, says, everyone single take a shot. every time Rob makes a sex reference. I hope y'all aren't driving anywhere tonight. Let's see. Dungeon Buster says, the lack of games I'm interested in is concerning. I have a feeling that after Breath of the Wild, the Switch will just sit there while Steam and PS4 fill the gaps for, well, everything else. I disagree-ish. I kind of get the concern there. I definitely think Nintendo is trying to do this whole, like, initial launch, and then you will definitely see something for holiday and Mario and all that. But I do feel like, unlike the Wii U, they are trying to do at least something every month to kind of keep it going. Like, April is Mario Kart, right? ARMS will probably be May. Splatoon 2 is going to be June. You know, and I honestly don't know what's beyond that. Maybe we'll get June is E3 and we can get more announcements and so forth. But I do feel like they're trying to pepper out some of these other releases to kind of sustain the year, if that makes sense. This is one little difference I see there than what we saw with Wii U. But this is a different type of launch, too. It's going to be launching in March, not November.
Still, that's just like the Wii U. That's like, exactly like the Wii U. Lack of third-party support, one major title coming out from Nintendo, you know, every month or so. And that's fine that Nintendo puts out decent games, but is first party going to be enough to drive people wanting this system? And I was on board with the Wii. I bought a ton of stuff for it. You know, I played it for a while, and then I didn't. I didn't play it for a while because, you know, most of the stuff that came out later on was multi-platform stuff, and it's like, well, shit, it's just way better on other systems. The Wii U, you know, I bought a lot of stuff digital because, you know, mainly because my son wanted to play stuff. I bought Splatoon, never got into it. So Splatoon 2, I don't give a shit about that. Mario Maker is pretty fun, but that's not on the new system.
Yet.
Well, goody. I'm not going to wait until 2018 to play a game that I have right now.
Let me get a couple more comments here because I want to make sure we get to our interview. RPG fan says, I hear you, Loki. I'm a single player. Nintendo doesn't have much for me beyond Zelda these days. So maybe, well, what about Xenoblade? I never got
into Xenoblade.
I think it's kind of cool. Let's see. What was the other thing I wanted to say about the whole, I don't remember the comment that put this out here. I think maybe it was Dark Tetsuya saying, is Netflix, Hulu really that much of a deal breaker? Here's the last thing I want to say on Netflix that's weird to me, okay? Is that you can, Netflix recently introduced this thing where you can actually download movies and watch them on the go. I think somebody in chat was saying something about, does anyone watch Netflix on portable devices? And yes, when I was flying to and from MagFest, since, you know, DC is a long flight, I was watching Netflix on my phone. I downloaded a movie called Hurricane Bianca, which, you know, if y'all watch Drag Race, you know what that is. I downloaded that movie and I was able to actually watch it on the flight. And that's something kind of new for Netflix that the Switch could really benefit from, is that, okay, so obviously this handheld Switch thing doesn't have a cell signal, so you're not going to be able to use Netflix unless you're on Wi-Fi, but you could download movies. And then when you start them on the, or like you start them on the TV and it's downloading to the Switch, so that way if you have to pick up the Switch and go somewhere, the rest of the movie is there. And yes, I know there's probably a lot of concerns with the whole internal storage, but those movies are not that big. I think that whole Hurricane Bianca was like maybe 350 megs, which isn't a lot. And we know the Switch is expandable, yada, yada, yada.
And it's only 720p, so I mean, it's not like you're downloading it a much larger video file. It's not that, like, what I want to say is it's not that it's a deal breaker that Netflix isn't on the system. It's that this isn't something that they wanted, that they didn't think of, it seemed like. That it's still very much to me where they're like, oh, well, stay tuned for more information about our networks, you know, our online system. It's like, this system comes out next month, you know, it's like, what the fuck? Or, you know, just a month away. I mean, like, what more time am I going to give you?
My thought was they're trying to pepper the information the same way they're peppering the games to keep the Switch in the gaming press.
It's not helping. It's all negative information that's coming out.
All right. We gotta move on here because we're going to be welcoming to the show right now a very special guest. I want to get our pal Matt Baum on the line, who's going to talk to us about a project that he's working with called Playing with Pride. And I think we have him on the line right now. Hi, Matt. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the show, Matt. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Good. Did you pre-order a Switch? Are you a Nintendo fan? You into that?
Yes. So our household is very Nintendo friendly. So my partner ordered a Switch like the day of the announcement.
Of course. And if you didn't do it the day of the announcement, you're probably not getting one right away.
Yeah. So I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. I know there's a lot of debate about the features and the power and the strange amount of storage space and all that stuff. But I'm just excited to play Breath of the Wild. I'm excited for more Mario Kart. I am curious about taking the device with me. So yeah. I'm all for it.
I seriously think all this debate on the show, which we've done every week for the past 15 years, you know, aside, I kind of think by holiday, everything's going to be fine. That's kind of where I'm at with it. But anyway,
I'd like to believe that about everything in the world.
Let's hope. So anyway, we could talk about the Switch with you all night, but I want to talk about this project that you're working on. It's called Playing with Pride. Tell us a little bit about this project that you're working on.
Yeah, so in a nutshell, it's about how people's lives are transformed when gay culture and game culture collide together. And so the way it started is we set out to answer that question that you mentioned at the top of the show about why gay game events or LGBT game events are important to people. This started a couple years ago when GamerX was getting going. That's the game convention with the LGBT focus. And we heard, like, you know, that conversation online, the questions online, oh, why do we need this? Why do we have a gay game convention? What does sexuality have to do with gaming? So we're like, oh, those are good questions. Let's find out. So we did a big road trip around the country, and we interviewed people in their homes about why they were going to GamerX. And what we started to hear were really intense personal stories about how games help people come out or meet their partners or find their tribe, reconcile with their family. And so we're like, oh, there's something really important going on here. And so what the project has turned into, we did these video interviews, and we presented some highlights at various conventions. We showed them at PAX and GamerX and HavenCon. We did a live stream that people can see if they go to playingwithpride.com. You can watch a live stream that we did of some of the highlights, where I talk and then James talks, and then we show some footage and go back and forth, and we talk to the audience. You can also sign up for the mailing list there at Playing with Pride for more announcements about it. And so now we're trying to figure out, because we've got over 100 interviews, we've got hundreds of hours of stories, how exactly do we want to present this to people? And so that's one other step that we're at right now, is just showing people the live stream that we've got at playingwithpride.com. And then there's a little feedback form where people can say, like, oh, this is what I like, this is what I don't like, this is what I want to see more of. Because we've got, like, people from all different backgrounds and all different walks of life and all different parts of the country just sharing these stories about how games have changed their lives.
And just a little bit of a personal testimony on this stuff as well, you know, for what I've watched from the live stream with the interviews, I really wish I could see one of the panels that you did. I'd love to see that. But I did watch the live stream bit that you did. And, you know, just from a personal perspective, you know, I can say, being a gay guy who was really into video games, I definitely felt like you were the outcast of two different camps. It's like, you know, you were not like pop culture savvy enough, even though I'm very pop culture savvy, but, you know, you weren't really like cool enough or whatever for the gay guys, because you were a bit of a nerd, and then you were too gay for the nerds, like, at some point. So, like, you feel like that double outcast. So just, like, personally, to hear these other people that are saying, like, the exact same thing is, like, actually really, like, comforting for me in a way.
Yeah, you know, it's something that we heard from a lot of people, that feeling of, well, I don't belong with this tribe, and I don't belong with this tribe, and who do I belong with? And these are actually two groups, LGBTs and gamers, are two groups that have a lot in common, even though they don't always see eye to eye. But I think folks in both groups have a lot to gain from playing together.
That's a really good point. I hope a lot of people caught there, is that, you know, gamers are often on the outs with the rest of society as well, and LGBT gets that as well, and we could probably do more working together than shouting at each other.
That's... Yeah, I hope so, because one of the things that we heard from people, we spoke to a lot of developers. For example, we talked to people at BioWare about creation of the character Krem and the Iron Bull, about what happens when people are working together to make a game more fun for everyone. I think Krem is a really good example of that. We spoke to it's actually kind of amazing how this happened, because we spoke to this one person in Vancouver about his experiences with gaming, and he shared stories about how when he was young, he had the bootleg version of Pokemon. I can't remember which Pokemon it was. He had a bootleg version of one of the Pokemons, and the save got corrupted.
It was Crystal. It was Crystal, and I know that because I recently watched
Oh, good. Yeah. So it was Pokemon Crystal. And So his save got corrupted, and the gender of the character that he was playing flipped, and he realized, oh, this is something that matters to me, and I don't quite know why. So we talked to him and interviewed him, and we put him in our presentation. And so when we presented at PAX, he came to the presentation to see it. His name is Justin Sane. He's a great cosplayer and drag queen and community leader up in Vancouver. And something else that we had in the presentation was Karen Weeks from BioWare talking about the character Krem, about how that character came about because at a feedback event that BioWare had, they were asking people for their thoughts on the games, and somebody came up and said about trans characters, I just want to see somebody in the game who looks like me and isn't a monster. And she said, well, after that, we all sat down together and we were like, we can do this. We can actually make this happen. And so Justin Sane happened to be at this presentation, and afterwards he came up and he was like, I think that person who said that was me. I think I was the one who asked for a trans character. And as it turns out, it was true. And we went back and got Karen and a bunch of other BioWare folks together with Justin. We sat them all down to talk about how he came to this event, wanted to see better trans representation, more gender fluid representation in games. They realized, oh, we can put people in games that we've underserved in the past. Yeah. And it was a great example of this virtuous cycle that happens when queer people find their voice and find their community and speak out. Game developers can hear them, and it changes the way that they make games. They make the games more inclusive so more people can enjoy them. And in turn, that has a positive effect on communities, and communities see that they're welcome in gaming and everybody can have a better time.
That's an outstanding story to hear, kind of like that direct influence with game makers.
Yeah.
But now, you keep saying we. This project is not just you. Your partner is involved, right? Your partner actually worked in the game industry for a while, right?
Yeah, that's true. James is a veteran of the game industry. We are collaborating on this. So he worked at LucasArts. He worked at Capcom. He worked at LeapFrog and some other places. And so we're working together on this project. He has just an encyclopedic knowledge of games. And I've absorbed as much as I can from him through osmosis. And him, he's got this great knack for putting a game in front of me and saying, I think you'll like this. And he's always right. So it's thanks to him, because I was, you know, kind of a gamer as a kid, and then it kind of fell away in high school and college. And then once James and I started dating, many years ago, and he brought me back into the fold. Essentially, he was like, "You'll like this game, and you should give this one a shot." So it's been great. I have really enjoyed working with my partner as a partner, in all senses of the word.
That's a great story. I love that. And you guys didn't kickstart this or anything like that. You guys took this trip you wanted to do and kind of turned it into this project, right?
Exactly. Yeah. There may be a Kickstarter in the future. We haven't decided yet. We haven't had a need for it yet, but we may in the future. We'll see.
Sure.
That's something that we're asking people for feedback on, like how they want to see this project progress. So based on their feedback, we'll decide what form it's going to take.
Well, and the reality the reality is, if people want a movie, those cost money to put on Blu-ray. So there's probably going to be a need for money there for sure. But
yes, yes. So we've done all the traveling so far. We've done out of pocket, and it's, you know, had a blast driving around the country. We drove from LA up to Vancouver, and then across the country, top of the country to Chicago and New York, and into Maine, and then back through Denver. We made a pit stop in Austin for HavenCon, and I'm going to be in Orlando later this in March, and so I'm hoping to do some interviews in Orlando, and we're also looking at Europe to talk to some people in Europe at some point in 2017. So that's going to be a bit more of an expense, so we're figuring that out now.
Although you have interviewed some people from overseas in this, right? Because didn't I spot Laura I'm going to mess up her name, but the Eurogamer writer Laura Kate Dale is in this, right?
Yeah, from Let's Play Video Games. We were lucky enough to catch her at GamerX in San Jose. Or maybe it was Santa Clara, but in California. So we caught her there. We talked to Jim Sterling, who, he lives in Mississippi, but originally from the UK. Mm. So we have spoken to a couple people internationally, but we want to get more people, particularly from the South, particularly from rural areas, and particularly from countries that, you know, we don't want it to just be the U.S. experience.
Sure.
Because we'll play games everywhere.
Well, Jamie's going to be bummed she missed tonight's show. She's from the South. Maybe she's out there listening. Anyway, how has the response been at some of these conventions that you've taken this to? Because you mentioned you have shown this at, or your work in progress, I should say, at GamerX. You've taken it to PAX. How's the response been?
Really strong. We've had a great reaction from folks. People are really interested. One of the things that we're hearing a lot is how can I see more? Because I mean, we literally have 100 and something hours of people just telling stories. You know, we've got people talking about, for example, one of my favorite stories is these two guys in DC that throw house parties, these gamer house parties where they just open up the throw open the doors and bring people in. So they've got zones of like, oh, the DDR is up there and Settlers of Catan is down in the basement and we've got Mass Effect going over here and we've got you know, Puerto Rico going over here. These great games about like people building up community and forming essentially like, you know, chosen families, which is something that I think is familiar to a lot of queer people.
Can I just say that the house party and doing the gaming at the house party, that is actually how about, gosh, it probably would have been 13 years ago or so. That is how I met Captain Spike from GameBuoy.org. And started, and started like a lifelong friendship. And obviously they're on the network here as well at Vogue. And just, you all know Spike and his immense knowledge of video games and all that stuff. Like we met and connected and started a friendship because of one of those types of house parties. Yeah.
It's such a big deal. Like those like gamer get togethers and the forming of community. It's so important to people, whether it's in real life or online. We talked to a woman in Las Vegas who she's a mom, she's raising a kid, and her son came to her. I think he was like early teens and was like, oh, I want to play World of Warcraft. And she was, you know, monitoring his games at the time. She's like, I don't really know what that is, so I should check it out, make sure it's appropriate. So she downloads a free trial. And then within like a couple of months, the whole family, as they all have gaming laptops and they are going on raids together as a family. And she joined an LGBT-friendly guild, the Spectrum Guild. And it turned into this big family for her where now everywhere she, you know, she can go all over the country and visit people from the guild. It's so important, those communities that form, because for a lot of folks, they do feel that they don't belong, that there's something that sets them apart. And games have a really great way. Like, nothing does this like games of bringing people together.
It's interesting you bring up MMOs and especially Warcraft. And I noticed when I was watching the footage that you had at playingwithpride.com that Warcraft was a theme that kept coming up. And that's even for me, that's been a thing because, you know, I just mentioned at the top of the show, Alan and I got married after, you know, 7 years together. But when
congratulations.
Thank you very much. I wasn't fishing for that, I swear. when Alan and I were first together, he lived in South San Francisco. I lived here in Sacramento, which is a good 100 miles apart. You know, we couldn't just drive up on a weeknight and see each other. So one of the ways that we would hang out, I'm using my quotey fingers, was through something like Warcraft. Warcraft allowed us to be together even though we weren't. That
right,
makes sense.
Right. So. I mean, that's something that we've heard. Warcraft has come up again and again and again. Yeah. We talked to one, you know, it's tough because we don't want to make it like Warcraft the documentary, but it kind of works out. It's like Warcraft and BioWare. We talked to this one person in, where was it? Just outside San Francisco, who was in the army. He was in the army and closeted, and there was no one he could tell because it was during Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And he was introduced to Warcraft as a way to just kind of get some alone time from everyone he was stationed with. And he realized he was playing as female characters, and it was something they wanted to explore more of. And then he started coming out to Don't Ask, Don't Tell went away. He was comfortable coming out to his friends. And, you know, he went into the army because he was like, I need to be more masculine. I need to be more manly. And Warcraft gave him permission to play as female characters and dress up and be girly. And now the latest thing that he's done, we interviewed him just after the holidays. He went to his army. I think it was his battalion or just the group of people he serves with. He went to the holiday party in drag, in like this big princess dress. And it was a huge hit. Like everybody loved it. It's amazing because Warcraft made him comfortable exploring his more feminine side and not feeling this pressure that he'd been putting on himself the whole time. Oh, I got to be more of a man. I got to be more stereotypically manly. No, you don't. And games are a great way to experiment with that.
If you guys have questions, of course, for Matt, our chat room is open over at live.vognetwork.com. Y'all are being quiet in there right now, but I'm assuming you're just listening intently. But if you do have questions, you can ask those over at live.vognetwork.com. I'll try to fit a few in here before we have to let Matt go. But just kind of piggybacking on the Warcraft thing, I mean, that's a cool story. But I was also, like, for me personally, something that kind of caught my attention was you had a trans individual who was talking about Warcraft, and that this was, you know, and I don't happen to be trans myself, so this is something I never thought of, right? Is that this was a trans person who was playing a female character and was able to kind of explore feminine, I can't even say this word, the feminine side through World of Warcraft. And, you know, it's interesting because I even know in the past I've made these jokes, and I've probably cracked them on air about how, oh, you know, everybody that's playing a woman in World of Warcraft is just some perv dude sitting there, right? You know, and those types of things. And hearing a story like that definitely stopped and made me think, huh, there's definitely a lot more to this than these stereotypes, I suppose, that are out there.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really true. The one person that we spoke to, Jude in Bakersfield, told us a story about how when he was presenting as female, he got more sexual harassment in the game than he did after he transitioned and, you know, was openly trans when he played. He'd get harassed more as a woman than he did as a trans person. We also heard from Laura Dale about how she was harassed for, you know, the people she was playing with felt that she was being inconsistent with her gender and withholding something, when in reality she was just trying to figure herself out at the time. It's been tough for a lot of people, because for sure it is possible for LGBT people to feel very unwelcome in games, especially when you don't see yourself, to feel like, oh, I guess maybe I'm not a gamer. Maybe games aren't for me. Mm. And so that's one reason why seeing yourself in games and why gay or queer game events matter to people. To see yourself reflected there and to see other people like you affirms, you exist. You're a person and you belong here, and we are eager to play with you.
And Fifth Dream in our chat over at live.vognetwork.com, kind of piggybacking on this story a little bit, saying, I'm kind of like that with MMOs. I've always felt pressured to be more manly, but I always play girls in games. And since I've been playing Final Fantasy 14, and maybe it's a coincidence, but I've kind of said, fuck it, and dress more how I want and stop trying to be so much of a dude. But then again, I'm goth, so androgyny is easier. But
yeah, that's great.
So it's not just even necessarily for LGBT only people, you know, it's a very broad spectrum. And actually, that I wanted to ask this question, because, you know, our audience here at OLR is not exclusively LGBT. We have a lot of, you know, straight folks that listen to this program. And we touched on that this a little bit in the beginning about, like, why might a straight individual be interested in something like playing with Pride? But what I wanted to ask was, since you have taken this to expos like PAX, you know, which is definitely not, I mean, there's, you know, a lot of straight guys that go to PAX. Like, have you had a response from the non-LGBT community, and what kind of response have you gotten? Like, have you heard that this project has worked in enlightening folks or what?
Yeah, well, so our goal isn't exactly to enlighten folks, but what we've heard is that from straight people in particular, one of the questions that we get a lot is just, how can I make my gaming environments more welcoming? What can I do to ensure that people are having a good time? And, you know, my advice there is, to listen, to ask people, you know, just to check in. Are you having a good time? Are you feeling okay? Is everything comfortable? And if there's a problem, if anyone's making you feel uncomfortable, if there's anything that's missing, well, what can we do to change that? What can we do to make sure everybody's having a good time? You know, never underestimate the power of just asking and listening. So that's been some of the response that we've heard from people who don't consider themselves part of the LGBT community but want to be good allies. You know, the two things we hear are, why is this necessary? And I think, to be perfectly honest, you know, this meaning LGBT game spaces or LGBT game events. And to be honest, I don't think they're necessary. I mean, nobody needs a game convention of any kind. We don't need it, but we like it. It's important to us. It matters to us. You know, we're not going to die if they don't happen, but they really do change our lives. And so what we found is, you know, at that collision of gay culture and game culture, it reveals that we that playing together really helps us understand each other, and mm. that's really what it's about. That we come together, we have a good time, we make friends, and we understand people that we might never have considered friends before.
I want to make sure, of course, I want to make sure we amply plug the playingwithpride.com website so folks can check out this live stream for themselves and give you that feedback that you are seeking about what happens next. Is this a documentary or is this a video podcast? But I also want to make sure we talk about your other projects, because you don't just work with this playingwithpride.com. You are also, you host a couple of podcasts yourself, right?
That's correct. So I have a couple. One is The Sewers of Paris, and that's at thesewersofparis.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And on that show, I talk to different gay men every week about entertainment that's changed the lives of gay men. So, you know, people share stories about how Madonna or Oscar Wilde or John Waters or whatever it is, those pieces of culture that have made a difference to them and have transformed things for them. I have an amazing story on one episode from this guy who watched some real cheesy 80s films. He was growing up in Russia and watched some really cheesy 80s films in the 80s. They were broadcast on this pirate TV station where you had to like wake up at 2 a.m. and tune the TV to a certain channel, and then you'd be able to watch, like, you know, Curly Sue Got, or Betty Sue Got Married, Curly Sue Got Married, or like just, you know, silly thing, or trading places. And but that formed this for him and his mom, who were just living together, it was the two of them, it formed this vision of the U.S. for them, of like, oh, the United States is a lot better than this world we're growing up in. Let's get out of this country. So his mother became a mail order bride so that they could get out of the U.S. and move to a place where he could, you know, it wasn't safe for him to be a gay kid in Russia. So they moved to Seattle, where he could be openly gay in a place that was a little bit safer. And so he's just got this amazing story about how these visions of the U.S. via weird 80s movies on a pirate TV station essentially saved his life. So I've got lots of stories about that, about culture that has changed the lives of gay men. That's at sewersofparis.com.
I feel so cliche. Sorry, when I hear an amazing story like that, I feel so cliche, because for me it was the Rocky Horror Picture Show. So, you know,
amazing.
And there's a ton of people like that, right? Rocky Horror has been huge for our community. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it has. And everybody has a different Rocky experience. You know, for me, it was watching it with the high school drama club and realizing, you know, is essentially getting permission from the movie to like other boys and to be weird about gender. Because, you know, I was growing up in a fairly un-gay suburb of Connecticut in the 90s. And Rocky Horror kind of opened that up, you know, to that song at the end, "Don't Dream It, Be It."
Yeah, for sure.
Kind of says, go be what you want to be.
Like, and that's why, like, Tim Curry is like a legend and always will be for me. But not to make this all about me, but it is part of the reason I'm still, like, I'm pushing 40 years old and I'm still involved with Rocky Horror. In fact, I'm hosting Rocky Horror here in Sacramento on February 11th, plug. But part of the reason I still stay involved to this day is so that exists for me, who's 18 now.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the kids today, you know, growing up who need it. I actually did a Rocky episode last year around Halloween. Uh-huh. From this guy who was actually, he was homeless living in LA, just squatting in different places. And the community that sprang up, and this is when it was first run in the late 70s, the community that sprung up around the Rocky Horror Picture Show for him, that was his community. Like, those were his people. That literally saved his life and gave him people to connect with when he had nobody and nowhere to go. So that's all on sewersofparis.com. My other podcast is Defining Marriage, and that's a little more casual. It's where my partner James and I talk about the week's LGBT news, but we're very casual and jokey and chatty about it. So half the show is about, you know, like this week we're talking about why Taiwan might become the first country in Asia to legalize marriage equality, and we talked about why that is. We talked about some of the silly stuff that's happening in Australia around marriage, and also there's this debate going on, very tiresome debate in Taiwan about, like, well, if we legalize marriage, couldn't people marry the Ferris wheel? And so, that argument. So we make
Ferris
fun of that.
Wheels need love too.
Hey, stop it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh boy,
you can love you can love a Ferris wheel. You just don't love a Ferris wheel. Love is a spectrum of many different colors, in my opinion. And the color that I love Alan with is not the same color that I love a Ferris wheel with.
Yes. Yeah, there are differences. I mean, I think that's a funny joke to make on behalf of the other side. But gee whiz, maybe they can think of some differences between same-sex couples and Ferris wheels.
Yes.
So anyway, so we talk about half about like LGBT stuff, and then we always get sidetracked on what games we're playing, and we had got way down in the weeds on whatever it is, whether it's anime or we're watching Steven Universe. So we had a lot to say about Steven Universe this week. So it's a lot of nonsense on top of whatever's happening in the news this week.
Let me shift back to games a little bit here with a question from our chat room. And, you know, you have not just your podcast, but you have a very rich history with some of the, articles that you've written for various, GLBT plus publications and so forth. You obviously kind of have finger on the pulse of all this stuff. But as a gamer as well, SSJ100 Matt wants to know in our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com, what are your thoughts on the nonsense online backlash over Tracer being gay, the Overwatch character?
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Look, Tracer's a lesbian, end of story. I mean, that's very reductive. Maybe she's bisexual. Who knows? But
to be fair, the creator tweeted, or the character design or something tweeted, she's lesbian. So we do know her identity is lesbian.
Okay. Fantastic. I think that's great. Sure. Of course, the people are having this backlash where they're like, no, but I wanted her to be straight. Well, for heaven's sake, if you need a attractive female video game character, please consult all other game culture. You have your pick of everything. Just let the lesbians have Tracer, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, and also, so what? She's a lesbian. If you still want to fantasize her as waifu, then fucking it's a fantasy. It's a fantasy.
Yes. That's a good point. Tracer does not actually exist. She is a fictional character. So you can believe whatever you want to believe about her. But officially, I think it's important. It's fun to joke about it, but it is also important to say, there are queer characters in games, and they're powerful, and their sexuality isn't like they're defined. Like, they don't shoulder the burden of representation for lesbians everywhere. That she is just living her life and being a hero and being a lesbian. Mm-hmm. We talked to a guy here in Seattle, Ian, who put it really nicely. He was talking about Shepard when he was playing Mass Effect. He said, "Finally, I could be the gay hero I've always wanted to be." And I mean, what an amazing opportunity to give people. If you can create a character that makes people feel like they can be a hero and they can be gay and they can be all the things that make up who they are all at once, they don't have to exclude a part of themselves. What an amazing feeling. And what a great way for people to connect.
Well, I think finally I can be the gay hero I've always wanted to be is a good note for us to end this on. Matt, thank you so much for being here on Orange Lounge Radio this week. One more time, all the plugs. What can our listener base do for you?
All the plugs. Please go to playingwithpride.com. Check out the live stream we've got there. Sign up for the mailing list. We've got some amazing stuff that we're working on right now, and we're excited to announce it very soon. So sign up for the mailing list there, and you'll be the first to know when we've got more stuff to show. You can also check out Sewers of Paris for personal stories about the entertainment that's changed the lives of gay men. That's sewersofparis.com, and also wherever you get podcasts. We've got the Defining Marriage podcast, where my partner and I joke and chat about what's happening with LGBT issues. That's DefiningMarriage.com and wherever you get your podcasts. And I also am on Twitter. I'm at Matt Baume, MattBaume. And I love to hear from folks, and I love to connect with people. So that's a great way to connect with me.
You are a busy man, Matt, and I appreciate you taking 20 minutes, almost 30 minutes, actually, out to be on our show this week. Dungeon Buster in chat saying this is a great interview. Thanks for the perspective. Thank you so much for being here, Matt. Thank you guys for listening. And hope to touch base with you in the future, connect with you. We seem to run into each other at conventions sometimes, so I hope I can come to your next Playing with Pride presentation at whatever convention I see you at next.
Hooray. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And thanks so much for having me on the show.
Thank you. Take care, Matt. Thanks for being here.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Again, that's playingwithpride.com. And you can also follow Matt on Twitter, Matt Baume, MattBaume. Thank you so much for taking the time out and being on our show this week. And I really look forward to whatever is next for Playing with Pride, be it, documentary, podcast, whatever they decide to do with it. Anyhow. We're going to get back into some gaming news, but not until we talk about our gaming weeks, because we are still, we're about an hour into the show. We haven't even talked about what types of video games we've been playing this week. So, Loki, how was your gaming week?
So, this week I did purchase a new game. So, I played it on Steam even. It was Happy Room. So, like, I was watching, you know, one of the YouTubers I watch, Ollie43, and he does a lot of pretty fun GTA 5 mod videos. And so one of the games he played was Happy Room. And if you've ever played, like, Happy Wheels, it's basically kind of the same type of thing where you have a rag doll that you torture through, you know, all sorts of means. Whereas Happy Wheels is more of getting from point A to point B via bike or whatever and being horribly offensive. This is just straight up, here's a dummy, create a death trap for the dummy, do as much damage as you can, try to kill the dummy. And so you do that, and they have different challenges, like, you know, put the dummy on a saw blade for, you know, 10 seconds, or, you know, freeze, electrocute, and set on fire, and I don't know. So I played that all this week, and I finally got to the point where I unlocked the sandbox mode and kind of the point where I'm actually getting trophies now, because all of it has to do with killing the dummy. So it was fun. It was like, I think it was like a $10 game. It was pretty cheap. But yeah, nice time killer. And then a little bit of Ingress, and I think I did manage to play a little bit of Skyrim Remastered. That was about it.
All right. My gaming week has been kind of boring compared to previous weeks because I didn't play any real new stuff. I thought about getting Dragon Quest VIII on the 3DS, and I really do love Dragon Quest VIII, but I think it, from what I'm hearing, it seems like it might be a little bit of a step down from the PlayStation 2 version because, like, the orchestrated music can't be in there. The little screen kind of makes it a little harder for some stuff. So, I don't know. I might still pick it up at some point, but I didn't end up getting Dragon Quest VIII. Do you guys think I made the right decision in chat? Live.vognetwork.com? Let's see. But what I did play this week, I did play more Final Fantasy 14, which, you know, I play a lot of that game, obviously. But they just had a new patch come out in this past week, which was a new story patch. That means there's new dungeons. There's a new raid I still got to do. So there's a lot of new stuff that opened up in Final Fantasy 14. So, you know, that team's done a great job of making sure that, like, new content is coming out every 2 or 3 months that gives you something else to do, to explore. So that's been great. So keeps me a fan and has kept me subscribed since the beginning of Realm Reborn. Really, so good job to the 14 team. And then I also played a little bit of Overwatch. Been playing that, like I mentioned earlier in the show. Alan and I will play. I'm trying to force myself to learn some new characters. So I've taken a weird liking to Anna lately because I learned you can use her scope, and you really, you know, should use her scope wherever possible. But you can really do a lot with Anna, like not even using her scope. Like, you can actually be kind of a more effective healer, just kind of like firing bullets repeatedly at your team and using the grenades and all the other stuff that she does. So I'm just kind of trying to learn. And Anna's not an easy character because I'm not a very good sniper. But I've, like, tried to learn how to use Widowmaker a little more, so I'm kind of, like, forcing myself to be a better sniper, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So, yeah, you don't really play Overwatch.
Nope,
I'm like, speaking a foreign language to you right now, but I swear it's you're missing out, Loki. It's a real fun game. Even if it is a shooter, not everybody's into shooters. I have a great time.
I'm in the shooters. I just don't want to play online games because it requires me to dedicate a ton of time to that stuff, and I just don't have that time anymore.
Well, you know, but the nice thing about Overwatch is those games aren't very long. You know, I usually I'll drop in, I'll play like 2 or 3 games, and then I'll get really frustrated and just quit. So it's kind of like, you know, drop in, drop out. But yeah, just been playing a little bit of Overwatch as well. So that's pretty much been my gaming week. I haven't really gotten around to doing any new stuff. I did do the Hatsune Miku game they released on PlayStation 4, but I can't remember if that was last week or this week. But they released a new Hatsune Miku game on PlayStation 4, but it's you download it and you only get like 2 songs. You have to buy all the rest, but it's like, it's kind of a bit of money to buy the other song.
Yeah.
But it's like, I think if you drop the, what is it, $50 or something to get both packs, I don't know if that's the right number, sorry guys, it's like 240 songs. It's a lot of songs. So I'm kind of like teetering on that buy now button, but because Hatsune Miku is as silly and ridiculous as it is kind of a lot of fun for a music game. Like I do really enjoy it. So like I keep hovering over that buy now button, but it's like, you know, there's going to be a sale. Like, you know, they're going to do a sale because it's Sega. There's going to be a sale Black Friday or something. Like, I can get it cheaper then, but I don't know. The question will be, can I hold out that long? I don't know. Anyway, Let's see. Fifth Dream in chat over at live.vognetwork.com says, I got all the Future Tones songs day one. I've been waiting for this for a while. And there's, I think people have actually tweeted me too that I should just take the plunge. So I probably will, but I just haven't yet. I've been getting a lot of use out of just those two songs that the free thing comes with. Anyway, so that's it for our gaming week. So a little bit of housekeeping. Of course, you can always follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/OLR. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/OrangeLoungeRadio. I do want to make sure I plug something here coming up this week, actually. Actually, it's tomorrow. So if you happen to be local, it would be awesome if you want to drop by and say hello. For those of you that are local, Sacramento IGDA, which, you know, we're buddies with Bree and Gabe and all the folks at SAC IGDA. They're actually doing an event tomorrow called Developing a Game from Concept to Paycheck, Success Through Community with T-Cubed, and it's going down at Hacker Lab downtown, and that's tomorrow at 6 o'clock Pacific, and I don't know if they're going to stream it or anything like that. Sometimes Bree gets out the phone and his Periscope.
It's so exciting, but because I'm going to actually be down that way, well, not tomorrow.
Come say hello.
No, I'm going to be down that way in a couple weeks, actually. I'm going to start working down there for about 6 weeks, because I have a stint going down there.
Nice. So I'm going to be talking to the creators of this T-Cubed, which is actually a physical game. It's an actual, like, physical cube that you play, like, a modern version of tic-tac-toe
on. Yeah, it's like a tic-tac-toe thing. And I tried playing on the prototype, like, back last SAC Indie Arcade, and unfortunately, I didn't quite get it.
It's evolved a lot. I watched this little presentation that the guy did, and the way he explained it to the whole crowd in, like, 5 seconds. So I imagine the game shifted a lot. I think they started though doing Android development, and it kind of shifted into this. So anyway, gonna be talking to him live at this event. They asked me to moderate it, so that's why I'm plugging it, because I'm gonna be there moderating this and talking about that. So for you locals, come on down. I don't know if there will be punch and pie, but possibly. So check that out. I'll be there. Isn't that all you need? All right. Let's get into some gaming news, Loki.
So the Oculus lawsuit's already begun. Of course, with that, ZeniMax did make a statement basically saying, you know, the trial has started, and, you know, we're excited to present our case and all that stuff, and we're so awesome, and yeah, whatever. So, but what's, you know, a little bit more interesting here, though, so Mark Zuckerberg is going to be testifying in the trial as well. So he's basically saying, you know, I don't think that good virtual reality is, you know, fully there yet. It's going to take 5 or 10 more years of development before we get to where we want to go. And then kind of defending that, you know, they didn't actually steal the information from ZeniMax. It's, you know, they're saying that it's pretty common to, you know, when you announce a big deal or do something, that all kinds of people are coming out of the woodwork and claiming that they did some portion of the deal. Like most people in court, I've never even heard of ZeniMax before. So he's basically kind of saying that they smelled money, and so now they're coming to try to get a piece of that.
So it's that Mariah Carey gift that's out there where it says, I don't know her. When it comes to ZeniMax, right?
Well, I originally, that's a kind of what it seemed like, and they're like, oh yeah, we want that $2 billion, and we'll see. I guess it'll all come out, you know, since it's going to trial now, that we'll find out what's going on with
it. Usually these things are settled, and there's both sides are being very stubborn.
They want $2 billion, so that they aren't going to sell for that, so yeah. It'll be interesting to see what actually happens, or I don't know. I can't help but think, though, I don't really care how the outcome is either way, because I think the Vive looks like a better product. So it's like, yeah, whatever.
Well, and it seems like a lot of folks are kind of coalescing around the Vive right now. I mean, I don't have the same insight into the VR scene as our pal Bobby does, but just, you know, just based on what I see on Twitter and people to get the hands on and all that, like, it seems like there's more kind of coalescing around the Vive right now.
Mean, there's going to be more headsets coming out for sure from a lot of different companies. I mean, especially now they announced more coming from, you know, CES, you know, that's going to tie in more with that Windows holographic stuff, their virtual reality OS type thing. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays, you know, part of it. But, I mean, this certainly is a hassle.
Well, some other big news that happened this week. Nintendo had another Direct, but this one was not about the Switch. It was about the Fire Emblem series, which I'm going to admit, I don't get super into the tactical RPGs, so Fire Emblem's not usually a franchise that I get very invested in. But I do recognize a lot of people really enjoy this franchise.
But, you know, you might be more happy if it was like the F-Zero Direct or Metroid Direct.
Yes, if it had been the F-Zero Direct, I would have popped the popcorn. I would have been on the couch with my pants off. No, I'm just kidding. TMI. I'm just kidding. But I would have been very, very excited if it was an F-Zero Direct. But I kind of, like, here's the thing. Like, I kind of... accepting, not really accepting, but just trying to accept, dealing with the fact that Mario Kart has just kind of taken F-Zero's place. And that was kind of solidified when they fucking put the F-Zero track in Mario Kart.
Yeah, but I think that's just that's just a throwback thing. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily anything. It's not like saying Mario Kart replaced Animal Crossing or Zelda. So, I mean, they had tracks from those. So, I don't know. I just think that it was... they wanted to do a track, and they're like, oh, hey, our cars kind of stick to things. That works. I mean, Mario Kart 8 is no F-Zero.
Anyway, ActDef says, seriously, where's my Kirby Direct? It's the 25th anniversary. Well, to be fair, ActDef, it's January, so there's time. But you, what you can pray for right now is that Kirby will get more acknowledgement than Metroid got. I'm just saying. Let's see. And Akuma JP says, Japanese love their Fire Emblem. That's true. I mean, Fire Emblem was a series in Japan for a long time before we ever saw it. And really, I kind of think we can thank Smash Brothers for finally getting Fire Emblem over here, because a lot of people were asking, who's these characters? Why are they? It's too bad that same logic hasn't worked for Mother 3, but at least we had Earthbound.
Yeah, I mean, F-Zero, what? They had the 25th anniversary 2 years ago for that. No new F-Zero yet.
No, where's not the yet. Love? Where's the love? I don't know. Anyway, so about the Direct. So for Fire Emblem fans, and even if you're a non-fan, maybe this is your chance to get involved with the series, because it's definitely going to show up everywhere. For a series that was almost dead a few years ago, Nintendo was like, if you don't sell 250,000 of these, we're done. This is a remarkable turnaround for Fire Emblem, so good for them. But anyway, Fire Emblem Echoes, Shadows of Valentia has been announced. It's going to be a 3DS game, which I found interesting, because I was ready to say, oh, the 3DS is done as of Pokemon Sun and Moon, but that doesn't appear to be the case.
No, they got to keep pumping money in that just in case.
I guess, but wow, that was kind of surprising to me, and I was kind of like, well, why not just put it on the Switch, because that's your new portable system. Well, Fire Emblem will be getting a Switch game in 2018. That was something else that they announced during this. So not only is there going to be the 3DS game, but there is going to be a Fire Emblem Switch game in 2018. It is going to be the first console game since Radiant Dawn, which was released in 2008. So that's a pretty big deal. Fire Emblem Heroes also coming out. This is Nintendo's next smartphone game. So it's the follow-up of sorts to Super Mario Run. But we knew they've been working on Fire Emblem and Animal Crossing games. So here we go. Fire Emblem Heroes is on its way. Originally in the presentation said would only be on Google Play right away, but after the fact came out and clarified it will be a simultaneous release on both platforms. February 2nd is the day. So that's not far away, really, for Fire Emblem Heroes. This may be a good way for people like me who are kind of, I don't know, I don't really like tactical RPG, but hey, when you put the price tag of free on it, I'll check it out, right? So,
well,
we'll see. Well, yes, but there are going to be microtransactions in the game. So we'll see how bad it is.
I can't believe they have actually, like, I know they did that with Super Mario Run on iOS, and I just figured it was, you know, Apple being retarded. But they had, you know, the whole, like, notify me. It's almost like a pre-order for a free-to-play game. I'm like, dude, nobody needs to fucking notify me that there's something on the market. You know, I don't care.
I have something that notifies me way faster. It's called Twitter. Just for the record. But even with that notify thing, it didn't even really work. Like, people got notified like midday.
It worked as well as the fucking Amazon notify me when the Switch becomes in stock. Twice it was for sale. Twice did it not fucking send one single notification.
And I was signed up for that too, and it never did send, did it? We never. Yeah.
It's like, what's the point, Amazon? Why even have that if you're not going to fucking use it?
Anyway. Let's see. Fire Emblem Warriors also will be coming to the new Nintendo 3DS. That, of course, is the Hyrule Warriors Musou game. What the hell was the original of that series? What? Why can't I remember?
Dynasty Warriors?
Thank you. Dynasty Warriors-esque type of game. That will be also on the new Nintendo 3DS. Interesting that they say just new Nintendo 3DS. My thought is they have now written off the old 3DS.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Stupid.
Yeah, seeing as I still haven't bought a new 3DS, that doesn't bode well for me. But that's pretty much what I wanted to say on Fire Emblem. But I don't. Did they come out and clarify that it would work on the older 3DS as well?
I don't think it will because if it's the Warriors game, just because I think that they did that for the new 3DS for
Hyrule Warriors,
and it ran like shit on the regular 3DS.
Huh. And ActDeft confirms it's new 3DS only. Wow. Well, good luck with that strategy.
Guess I better buy a new 3DS. Oh, nope. No, not going to do it.
Well, at least I'll have the Switch, so I can always get the Switch version. But
yeah, I mean, it's not going to be an underpowered system or anything. So.
All right. Anyhow, do you want to do this? So we have to divvy up Dark Sakura's stories because she was slotted on our list here, but she's not here. She had to cancel last minute. So do you want to do this one, Loki?
Sure. So apparently some Zelda fans have uncovered the Breath of the Wild backstory from the special edition map. So they were showing off the map on the whole Treehouse live stream, and apparently people have decoded the Hyrulean language on there, and so they've kind of gotten the backstory. So here's what it says. Hylians, past stories of a destined time long past where multiple races lived and worked together in harmony. The Sheikah tribe's blue aura breathed through the land. This mutual prosperity continued until a cataclysmic disaster struck. The hero and the princess attempted to seal the terror, which became known as the Calamity Ganon. Ooh, Calamity Ganon. That's not just regular Ganon. That's Calamity Ganon.
I like Calamity Jane.
Divine beasts woke from four directions and deployed a mechanical army, which made the king and his people fearful. They fractured Ganon's powers and sealed him, but the Sheikahs were banished from the land ever since. So it's Zelda. Ganon rose to power. They broke up the Triforce. It's fucking Zelda.
And that's okay, because that's the game we all want to play. So that sounds fine by me. Anyhow. I hope that some people would have considered what we just talked about spoilers, but I really think there's a lot more layers to this game than that one little piece. So I hope your feathers weren't ruffled by us going over that, but it is traveling around.
It's a backstory. I mean, everybody
wants to know about this new Zelda. They haven't, for all, you know, that's out there, they haven't said a lot about it. I mean, they've showed the game, they have the trailer and so forth, but we don't know a lot about the story. So be interesting to see where it goes. Anyhow, what else in gaming news, Loki?
All right. So apparently the developer of the last Guitar Hero game, Freestyle Games, has been acquired by Ubisoft. Does that mean that they're going to work on something else?
Rocksmith?
Yeah. I'm hoping not, though, because remember, Freestyle...
Or Just Dance.
Fuck Just Dance. because Freestyle Games, remember, they did the DJ Hero franchise.
Yeah.
So please, another DJ Hero game.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Or
if
DJ... something else game. Because
a DJ
game.
Smith type
DJ
of game.
Smith?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
Beat Smith?
Maybe.
Dubstep Smith?
Well, you. I'm just glad to hear they're not closing, because like their games, as far as I've heard, have kind of underperformed, but I really feel like it's not their fault. Like a lot of what happened in the DJ Hero and the Guitar Hero era was just like saturation in the market of music
fucking
games.
Ubisoft, because they decided to have like so many developers making... just fucking like million Guitar Hero games. Like they have four Guitar Hero games coming out each year, which is too much. And then on top of that, you know, a lot of these other studios get rolled into fucking Call of Duty, where they're just like, oh, we got four different studios working on Call of Duty and some working on DLC. It's like that would be where these guys would end up had they not been purchased.
Yeah, that's really. And so what the last thing they really did was Guitar Hero Live, which was like the reboot of Guitar Hero, which really wasn't bad at all. But like, I think people were just like,
don't care. Like,
they don't care.
It doesn't have the impact anymore that it used to do.
So I'll be curious to see what Freestyle Games. But like you mentioned, they also do Call of Duty stuff now. So they kind of have a very broad range of stuff they do. So it'll be very interesting to see what they do when they team up with Ubisoft and what ends up coming out. But I imagine we won't hear anything until E3 at the earliest, if then. because projects take time. So we may not hear anything until 2018, for all we know. Anyhow, something you can do right now, especially if you have a PlayStation VR. You know, there was a lot of VR games that hit early on when the thing first came out, but now it's been drying up a little bit, even though it is January.
It hasn't been drying up, but there's just not a whole ton of, like, not a really lot of great
compelling
stuff.
Software. Yeah.
Like, they have that roller coaster game that was supposed to be coming out that came out and was just shit. It was absolute dog shit. So, you know, that is unfortunate, but there's not, like, really big games coming out for VR. I mean, aside from Resident Evil 7, which is supposed to be next week, but beyond that, there's not a whole ton on the horizon.
Well, something that's an added benefit now for PlayStation VR is that there is now support for 360-degree videos on YouTube. So the app has been updated, so you can actually look at these 360-degree videos. Granted, there aren't a ton of them, but the New York Times, I guess, has a daily 360 video that they do. So I imagine a lot of times when these new technologies come out, like you see the 4K TVs on display at, you know, your local Best Buy or whatever, they're always showing either like a sports thing or it's nature. Like, let's explore the insides of a volcano, and you can see it in high definition, and you can make out every single rock that's there. So I imagine these are the type of videos that are available on YouTube. I don't have a PSVR, but I imagine these are the type of things that are available on YouTube 360, right? Explore the insides of a volcano.
I haven't done that, but I've done them on
National Geographic, goes to the rainforest, those types of things.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's that kind of thing. I mean, it's I don't know. They're okay. Like, I watched one with, like, dolphins running along a boat or something.
Oh, dolphins
like
are cute.
It was all right. It's like, okay. A lot of them I find, you know, the 360 videos, it's like, there's just really no need for them to be 360. I don't know. Remember
Let's get a 360 video of a Gwar concert or something that I can just really be there in the middle of things. I want that guy to like, inhale blood and then spit it all over the camera at one of these like death metal shows. That's what I want to do on YouTube 360 because I'm getting too old for a mosh pit. So wouldn't that be an exciting experience? Would you watch a rock concert?
Maybe once.
Maybe one.
I don't know. It's just I tried, I guess. I still have to try it out. I haven't bothered to mess with that. I haven't played a lot of VR stuff. I actually have, I purchased last sale, I think, that whole, what the hell is it called now? It's the bar VR one where you actually can, like, throw bottles and, like, you can play games. Like, you can play, you know, billiards and skee ball and shuffleboard and darts and all that stuff. Or you can stack chairs, you can throw bottles, you can do all sorts of stuff. And it's multiplayer, so you can play with other
people. You
can
throw bottles at people?
You can throw bottles at people.
Bar fight!
Yeah, you could. You could do a bar fight, or you can, like, stack chairs and then, like, knock them over.
Okay, that's awesome.
Or you can, you know, just cheat in skee ball by, like, crawling up the, you know, skee ball thing to drop the balls in. Somewhere.
Best use of VR yet.
It's pretty silly, but more of that stuff, please.
To register participation for this week's episode of Orange Lounge Radio at VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase OPTION.
All right. Well, Valve, obviously they are behind the HTC Vive, and hopefully they're going to be developing some more VR games. And it has been talked about this week that Valve does have more unannounced games in the works. And this is straight from the Gabe himself, because he did a AMA on Reddit. And the question that was asked was, is Valve still working on any fully fledged single player games? And the answer that Gabe Newell gave was yes. That's it. Just yes. Very direct and to the point.
Honest, I think I don't really care about sequels and stuff, but like, I'm just glad they're working on something because, like, honestly, they haven't had a lot come out recently. And I used to like it when it was like, when they were releasing more stuff frequently, like Left 4 Dead and Portal and all that stuff, I'd be just happy for a sequel for anything or something new even, just because all their stuff's pretty fantastic.
And apparently Gabe also replied to like a Half-Life 3 question and wrote a very tongue-in-cheek, the number 3 must not be said. So Gabe is self-aware, everybody. So
yes, I'm sure he is aware of the internet.
I'm sure, yes. Gabe has apparently heard of the internet and has seen your memes. Look out. Everybody, he's listening. Anyway, Yeah, no clues really in the AMA what else is going on. But he did say as part of the AMA that they are trying to get more games on the Source engine, and that is the foundation of some unannounced projects. So there it is.
He said, listen, we are not making any games with the name with the number 3 in the title, period.
Dungeon Buster in chat says, are you working on something? Yes. Internet loses its collective shit, pretty much. SSG100 Matt says, Gabe has seen your dank memes. He's unimpressed. Pretty much. Let's all hope Gabe doesn't listen to this show. Anyway. Dark Tetsuya jokes, Half-Life 2, episode 2.2. See, no 3 in there.
Oh, there'll be a new Half-Life game. It'll be like a remastered Half-Life game. It'll be a Half-Life
full life. All right. Loki, what's next before we get to the classic game of the week here soon?
Half-Life. Okay. So, Nintendo, you know, they've released, you know, Super Mario Brothers for, you know, many times on Virtual Console. Well, the Wii, I want to say, yeah, the Wii version of the game, apparently someone dug through the actual files on Virtual Console, and they found out that there's some lines of code from a header from an NES file. Now, those NES files were built originally for emulators. So this basically isn't necessarily a dump from the ROM, because this was added specifically to those things to, you know, point the emulator to the right ROM files to read. So what's kind of funny is this file actually existed on the internet prior to the Wii. So it's almost like that they downloaded the ROM and then resold it to you. And the ultimate irony.
Yeah, I know. And it's one of those things where I notice there seems to be a lot of rage around this story or whatever. Like, how dare Nintendo sell us this product? But I'm kind of like, well, it's kind of a funny gotcha in a way.
It's not a funny gotcha. It's basically...
Why not? Well, it's their, like, fucking game. Let them do what they want.
Well, right. I understand that. And it is technically their property. But it's like someone dumped it. I'm trying to think of the best way to describe this. So, like... imagine that somebody... Okay, here's a good example. I think that we can liken this to, like, someone fan-translating a game, and then they decide to sell the game online with those translations. You know, technically, it's mm-hmm. their thing. It's something that was added to the game, you know, modified to the actual ROM file, and then they're reselling it because, hey, it's our property, and we would just sue you anyways. I mean... It's such a minor thing, though, for this NES ROM, which is kind of funny. I think it's one of those funny, like, haha, you know, they tell us not to download ROMs, and here they are downloading ROMs and reselling them.
Well, but it took a long time to figure this out. I mean, how long has Super Mario Brothers been on the Wii Virtual Console? The Wii's a 10-year-old system now. I don't remember what was out day one for Virtual Console, but I can't imagine this wasn't one of them. So it's been like 10 years until people figured this out, right?
Yeah, I'm just surprised they didn't redump it themselves, but I guess the data would be the same. Huh. But the header thing, that's kind of interesting. I wonder if it actually uses the header in their emulator, or if their emulator is based off of, like, you know, one of the NES emulators out there.
All right. Well, let's see. I got to get to one more story here, and then we'll give Dark Sakura a call to do our classic console of the week. But speaking of Zelda and the Wii U, it was confirmed this week that Breath of the Wild will be the last Wii U game. And that was confirmed by Reggie Fils-Aimé, the man, of course, at Nintendo.
I'd assume that's the last Nintendo first party.
Right. From a first party standpoint, there's no new development coming after the launch of Breath of the Wild. Okay, but to be fair, I mean, sure, maybe a third party will put something out, but, like, even the indies started jumping ship, right? Everybody's like, nope, we're developing for the Switch now, and if you kickstart it on Wii U, we can move that over or whatever. But he also said, we really are at the end of life for Wii U. So, confirmed that's it.
Pretty sad. It didn't last that long.
No, Wii U really didn't last that long. But we kind of... It's not surprising, though. Nintendo really wants to shift the conversation. You know, everybody's written off the Wii U at this point, so yeah. Nintendo really wants to shift the conversation.
They wrote it off because of an underpowered system with underpowered specs that didn't have third-party support. kind of like their new system. I mean, so what makes you think that this is not going to fucking be a whole repeat of this thing? Just because, oh, I can take it somewhere and... But when the novelty runs off on that, like it just runs out, I just think they're not learning their lesson is the thing.
Well, they don't really have a lot of time. Like if the Switch is a failure, then Nintendo is going to be, I don't know what's going
to
happen.
Put out a console that has some fucking muscle in it. That's what you need to do. You know, oh, your console's not going to be the cheapest. Big fucking deal. If you have the games and the support from third party, it won't matter.
You know, something that was posed to me the other day, which I think is worth asking, is that what if Nintendo can add a little oomph in that dock? Because they could sell, theoretically, a dock that would be capable of 4K and all this other stuff for the system, right? They could do a little bit more of an incremental upgrade, a la PlayStation 4 Pro or Project Scorpio, but even cheaper because it would just be the dock.
I don't think so. And the reason for that is because I think that the way that it actually interfaces with the dock is it's just outputting. It's basically extending HDMI out from the system and adding a power source. So I don't think that I have to actually take a look at the system, but I don't think it's like some sort of, you know, new thing. I bet it's just like HDMI out and power in and that's it. You know, maybe something that, it might even not even necessarily be something that tells it it's in the dock mode. That could be just when it receives power from the video signal through the HDMI port that it's, okay, now I'm in portable or docked mode or something like that. But I don't think that they're going to be able to add any extra processing to it. What they probably will do later on down the road is release a system that's 1080p handheld and, you know, maybe a little bit beefed up specs or something like they do with all their other systems. It's just... I'm very concerned by this. This is one of the reasons I'm very hesitant about the system. It's like, I like the idea of a portable system, but I think I'm just buying into the hype too much, and I don't know.
Well, we will see what happens, but for now, I want to get to a segment that we do on the show called the Classic Game of the Week. But what a twist! It's going to be the Classic System of the Month tonight. We're going to get our good pal Dark Sakura on the line here, who's going to take us down memory lane so we can talk about a classic system of the week. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
My face hurts.
Sorry about your face. We miss you.
Me too. Well, thank you.
So
I have a sinus infection.
Are you
wrong?
Is Jamie really quiet for you guys or is it just me? I don't know.
I'm talking loudly.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Your levels look, it's just for some reason in studio, you're not coming through very loud, but your levels for the folks that are listening at home look like they're just fine. Yeah. So anyway, sorry about that. It's live. What can you do about it? How has your week been, Jamie?
Kill it with fire.
Sorry to hear that. shall we take a trip down memory lane with the classic console of the week?
The classic console of the month.
Oh, excuse me. The classic console of the month. What did you pick for us?
It's actually two, but they're related. The FM Towns and the FM Towns Marty.
All right. The FM Towns and the FM Towns Marty. Hold on. I'm getting a little bit of music up here for folks to hear. Sorry. Wasn't expecting to be that loud. There we go.
Okay, it sounds like writing to me.
Sure is.
Well, the FM Towns was a computer that was put out by Fujitsu between 1989 and 1997. It was meant to be a multimedia and PC gaming machine. In 1993, a gaming console came out called the Marty that was compatible with all the existing FM Towns games. So the FM stands for Fujitsu Micro, and Towns is likely coming from Charlestown, who won the 1964 Nobel Prize in Physics, because at the time Fujitsu was naming all of their PC products after Nobel Prize winners. So the computer itself, it was an 8-bit computer, and it had a lot of parts supplied by NEC. So you probably will see a lot of crossover for games between that and the PC Engine. This one also, one of the specifics with it is that it was really dedicated for gaming and graphics applications. It ran on Windows 3, 3.1, and Windows 95, and it had its own OS called Towns OS that was based off of DOS. So most of the games were written in assembly in C. So if that gives you any kind of indicator for, you know, about where it was in comparison to the other things that were out at the time. But it also had a CD-ROM in 1990, so it was, you know, pretty much ahead of its time for the day. As for the Marty, the Marty actually had different iterations of it. There was a version that, like I said, came out in 1993, and it was the first 32-bit home video game system. Had a built-in CD-ROM and disk drive, and it was meant to run, like I said, the games that were running on the FM Towns PC. There was also the FM Towns Marty 2 in 1994 that was a little bit lower in cost and could play some of the other games that had a faster CPU in it. And another one that's interesting is the FM Towns Car Marty that was built into cars, had a GPS in it. It had the GPS had both audio and video guidance, and it could be detached from the car and played at home. So it was pretty crazy for its time. And it could run its virtual resolution up as high as 1024 by 512 back in the day. So as far as games that came out, the systems had a ton of games. As you can hear in the background, you know, that's Raiden Densetsu, which is basically just Raiden. For anime fans, I had a bunch of the 90s anime games on it, like Sons on Eyes, Dragon Half. It even included some of the fighting games like Asuka 120%. We had Bubble Bobble, Chase HQ. I'm trying to think if there's any more that we would have seen over here. Oh, Emerald Dragon, which I've actually covered before for Classic Game. Garu Densetsu Special, which was Fatal Fury Special over here. All kinds of great games on there. And even, I think, the home version of Truxton 2. So it had Puyo Puyo, it had all kinds of interesting games. Ravenloft, Return to Zork, a couple of the Modok War games. So yeah, it's a great system. If you're trying to find one now, they're pretty pricey. But I think that there are emulators out for it. And at the time, these were pretty much the best versions of a lot of these games you could get at home if you had the system. And so that's your classic system, is the FM Towns family.
I have to admit, I have never played one, unfortunately. Is this something that exists in the gaming vault that I just have failed to see, or is this...
No, actually, I'd love to have one, but I don't actually own one.
Bummer. Well, all right, y'all.
Yeah.
You know what to get Jamie for Hanukkah next year.
Well, if I were to check eBay right now, let's see how much one of them costs so I can give you an idea of a couple, you know, how many thousands you're going to pay for one.
Yeah, Akuma JP in the chat says it's too expensive. I've never seen one of those. JD in chat says, I heard about this console because Zach McCracken had a 256 color port.
So right now, an FM Towns Marty boxed with Image Fight coming with it is $700 right now.
That's pretty pricey for an old-ass computer.
I found a broken one for $135.
Oh, yay.
And I found one that comes with Puyo Puyo for right around $500. So that's what you're looking at for the cost.
All right. Well, Jamie, anything else you want to share with the listeners here before we go to break?
Resist.
All right. Have a great week. Feel better. And we'll see you hopefully back in studio in 7 days.
See you then.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
There it is, your classic console of the month. With that, we're going to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We have plenty more show to come. We're going to talk a little bit when we come back about Super Mario Run, Pokemon Go, but not just handheld stuff. We're also going to talk about Street Fighter, Is there a Street Fighter handheld? I hope not, because it's probably not. Well, I'm talking about besides like what they did on like the Game Boy and all that stuff. Well,
they had Street Fighter 4 3D that was on the 3DS. Yes,
I was thinking mobile phone, but I feel
I'm
like
sure that there is, and I'm sure that it sucks. But, I mean, if Capcom's going to put Mega Man on mobile, you better believe that Street Fighter's
right,
probably
well, it's
on
not there. About the mobile version of it. So anyway, we are going to take a break and come back with more show, including Rapid Fire News, your emails, and your calls at Orange Lounge Radio on Skype. When we come back with more of Orange Lounge Radio. Welcome back, everybody, to Orange Lounge Radio, live tonight on the 22nd of January, 2017, with episode number 673 of our show, already in progress. If you're just joining us live, you missed a really fun part eight. We were talking about the Switch a little bit, and our pal Matt Baum joined us to talk about playing with pride. So if you missed the first half of the show, I guess you're just going to have to listen to it on the podcast. Sadly, on the podcast feed, though, you don't get to take music breaks with us, so you didn't get to hear some of the music from Ninja Gaiden that we were playing during the break here that we were doing live. And did you know, Loki, I can beat Ninja Gaiden 1, 2, and 3 straight through without losing a life?
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, actually, I was sharing some alternative facts with you just then, yes.
Sorry, I was too busy distracted looking at Bobby's little video they posted of him making snow angels out of confetti. And
oh, with it celebrating that yeah. The team's going to the Super Bowl?
As you can imagine, I was a bit distracted.
No, that's fine. It's fine. I think he actually has been posting on his Twitter. Like, people have been photoshopping him in that video, but like with other people's faces. It's crazy. I think he's becoming a meme or something. I'm sure he will have lots to share on his own show next week. So even though I'm cracking jokes about Ninja Gaiden, you know, I don't even think I could beat the first one when I was younger. But if I feel like I was good at video games when I was younger. Like, I used to be able to beat stuff like Mega Man 2 that I go back and play now, and it's like I keep dying over and over. And I don't know if it's just like I've lost the muscle memory of the levels or whatever. But is there some really hard to beat video game in your past, Loki, that you beat that you're like really proud of, like I beat this video game and I am an awesome gamer for doing so?
I don't know. I did finish VVVV except for one of the things, which was a pain in the ass and I didn't want to do it anymore, but I think I finished that.
I beat Rygar. That's probably my biggest thing, because you know Rygar you couldn't fucking save. Or it had no password, right? The original Rygar on NES. So it was one of those things where I had to leave it on overnight so I could come back and play it later. And I did, to be fair, I had a little help. I used, I don't know if it was Nintendo Power or some other little like
Game
guide.
Game Genie!
No, not that kind of cheating. Like a guide. You know, this was obviously a day long before GameFAQs. But what we had back then, I think it was like a Nintendo Power or something that had tips for getting through different levels. So, yeah, I was able to beat Rygar. And heaven forbid if I could play that game for anything now. So, anyway, let's see. I'm trying to see if anybody was answering that question over in our chat over at live.vognetwork.com. Let's see. Dark Tetsuya says, I was waiting for the punchline. That's in regards to the joke I made there a minute ago. Dungeon Buster says, a speedrunner called Arcus87 on Twitch regularly runs Ninja Gaiden around 12 minutes. His world record is 11:42, I think. Wow, that's pretty... That's still pretty impressive. Speaking of world records, we should give a shout out to regular guest and OLR superfan Flacco Jones, who apparently has officially certified the fastest time in PT right
but
now.
But I thought he didn't have it recorded.
No, he did. He got the Elgato thing, which I thought you gave it to him or Jamie did.
Jamie gave it to him.
All right. Well, one way or another, probably passed through Shane or something. I don't know. But he got the Elgato. And he has, like, it's been certified on the Speedrun archive site or something like that.
That's cool.
I know he keeps bidding to try to do one of the Games Done Quick marathons. So whenever they let PT in, we'll hopefully see him there. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Cheer him on. Anyway. All right. let's see. Rama says, Bart versus Space Mutants could not beat it. Well, then if you couldn't beat it, that's not an accomplishment, is it? I remember a game. I'm just messing with you. I remember a game on Super Nintendo I played a lot of that was also very hard. It was Bart's Nightmare. Bart's Scary Nightmare? Something about
Bart's Nightmare, yeah.
Is that it? And it was like you would jump into a page, and it was some other like mini game or something. It was weird-ass game. It's weird to think The Simpsons have been around that long, where there were Simpsons games on the Super Nintendo yet The Simpsons is like still a thing that's on TV. Have we had Simpsons games lately? I guess it's all mobile.
Yeah, no, they had a console thing, game. Remember EA put out that was actually supposed to be pretty good.
I just remember that mobile game everybody's playing.
Well, there's that one too.
Yeah.
But like there was actually the console game, which was supposed to be pretty good. Mm. And they did a Family Guy game, which was, I don't know. Well, Activision did that. But I don't know. I remember it.
All right, let's do some rapid fire news, travel around the gaming world and check out some news very quick. Loki, we'll have you do yours and you can do Jamie's as well if you don't mind.
But definitely nothing's going to compete with the South Park game, which I think the new one's coming out pretty soon.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be pretty soon. The Fractured Butthole.
The Fractured Butthole, yeah. Yeah. That is something I'm looking forward to. So Final Fantasy 15 has been patched, and now they've added some additional enhancements to the photographing. So now not only will you get just the random photographs, but you can actually do your own photographs and set up, you know, custom pictures and stuff like that. So that's kind of cool. They also had some new packs. They had a holiday pack plus, which was the Moogle Chocobo Carnival that opened, the festival ensemble costume for Noctis, and the holiday pack plus exclusive photo frames. And then they had, you know, the free version as well, which just gave you the Moogle Chocobo Carnival and a Chocomog tea for Noctis and a holiday pack thing.
No word on the Gladio side story, though, huh?
No, not yet. Hmm. And then they also had a self-photographing feature. That was something that was added. That was what I was just talking about. But that was also one of the things that was made available there. I still have yet to go back and play through this. I am just not feeling compelled at all to play through Final Fantasy 15, which is really sad.
It's
even
worth
less
it.
So than Final Fantasy Zero. What if I had that last one that was
Type Zero or whatever?
Type yeah. Zero. I have no desire to play that.
I think 15 is worth playing through, and you can get through it faster than almost any other Final Fantasy game I can think of. I can't think of any Final Fantasy game that's probably shorter than 15. Which I realize is good news and bad news. You can make 15 a longer game with all the side quests and the other things there is to do, and of course there's even more coming. But to get through the base game as it is now would probably take you less time than it would, even Final Fantasy 6 or 5. Maybe 4 is just as long. I can't remember. But then again, 4 is always shorter, like, I think it's shorter than it really is, because I always forget, like, oh, yeah, you have this whole thing where you go underground and there's, like, half the game there. So, yeah, I don't know. You should check it out at some point, though, Loki.
I guess.
Anything else?
Yeah. And then, of course, let's see. We had some more backwards compatible games, which is awesome. So, for Xbox One, you're going to have now Tekken 6. And also, what else was there? Mutant Storm Empire, and
that's an old twin
Midway
stick
Arcade Origins. So those are three games that are available now.
Man, I have the Midway Treasures thing they released on original Xbox, but I don't have the one they did on 360. Boo.
Yeah, and then of course, you know, there was a brief cameo from Overwatch. They had the bunny symbol from D.Va that showed up in one of the pictures from the Women's March that happened yesterday.
And, you know, to be fair, there were a lot of, I don't know if you saw some of the clever signs that were out there, but there were a lot of very clever done signs that were at the mark, because, God, there was, 2 million people out there yesterday?
Yeah.
Just tons and tons of people. And all with very, you know, sassy signs. And there was a lot of pop culture references in the signs, like just lots. So it's pretty cool that, like, gaming is represented there as well. But, the, you know, the fact that this was also the Korea Women's March, you know.
Yeah.
But I hear D.Va is a very, very, very popular character over there, you know, because she is also the Korean representation in the game. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Let's see. Also, speaking of Overwatch, there are some new skins coming to the game. The Year of the Rooster event is going to be coming to Overwatch. It starts on January 24th and maybe runs through the 31st. Nothing official has been confirmed as far as what the dates are that it will be running, but apparently some image leaked out of China, and that's where people are getting it from. Now, Blizzard teased some images of the Lunar New Year event, including some new skins for Mei and D.Va that actually look really, really cool, I gotta say. say. But some of the images that leaked from this China picture from China that was on Reddit, there's also going to be skins for Zenyatta, Winston, Roadhog, and Reinhardt. And who knows, maybe even more that aren't showing up on some of the publicity photos. A week seems pretty short for an Overwatch event. So I imagine those loot boxes, you're going to want to try to get those fast and furious. Hopefully the arcade mode will help you earn a few more. But if not, I'm sure Blizzard will be more than happy to take your money to open up more loot boxes where you might get one of these skins. So there you go. Yeah, check that out in Overwatch starting in this next week. Metroid, of course, always forever in our hearts, even though Nintendo doesn't seem to do anything official for it. Even though Nintendo won't do anything official, that does not stop the fan community. That's right, there is yet another fan game that's been released. It's a prequel fan game called Metroid Rogue Dawn. It is set before Zero Mission, and it's a mission that is mentioned in the original Metroid game manual. And that's really all it is. So it's not a ROM hack or anything like that. It does use the original engine, though, but apparently the team that created this rebuilt the assets and made original music for the game. So anyhow, that is out there now. You can check that out at romhacking.net. It's actually hosting the Metroid Rogue Dawn ROM. I'm sure it's just a matter of time until there is a cease and desist letter placed on this game, probably
so,
just because
so
it's not
So is that
my name.
Actually like an NES ROM?
I believe so. Yeah.
See, that would be awesome to stick that kind of stuff onto like the NES Classic thing. Yeah, you know, like those nice ROM hacks. Speaking of ROM hacks, one thing I forgot to mention is this is kind of file this under that, well, because I can type thing. Somebody has made Bubsy a playable character in Streets of Rage 2.
Why?
Because they can. Because it's silly. Yes, that's right. So you can actually get that ROM as well. They have that available on via romhacking.net. So go check that out. But yeah, he's got his own title animation and physics, and he's replacing, I guess, Max Thunder. I think it looks silly. Why not?
I need to see this in motion. It sounds hilarious.
It's pretty awesome.
All
yeah, right. They got like a little animation from it.
All right. That's it for Rapid Fire News. So let's travel around the world and check out what's coming out in stores this week, starting with the U.S. Loki.
Oh, goodness. And I'm totally unprepared. Let's see. Well, I believe that this is... Isn't this the week for Resident Evil?
I think you're right.
Yeah, so Resident Evil 7 is going to be coming out on Xbox One and PlayStation 4. That would also include PlayStation VR as well. I don't think there's much else coming out here. Let's see. Open. Damn it. Okay. And then what else we have here? So, one second here. It's the links we get are for 2016.
Uh-oh. Oh, we need to update that. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it just keeps... It's for, like, September 2016 or something like that. Okay, there we go. Other things that are going to be coming out as well... let's see. We've got Tales of Berseria.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I forgot there was
That's
another
gonna
Tales game.
That's going to be coming game. Out on PC, yeah. PlayStation 4. Yakuza 0 on PlayStation 4. And then Memoranda on PC, Mac, and Linux. The Wardrobe on PC, Mac, and Linux. Twin Star Exorcists on Vita. Disgaea 2 is being ported to PC. And Double Dragon 4. That's coming out on PC and PlayStation 4.
Oh, wow.
Yep. Digimon World Next Order on PlayStation 4. Divide on PlayStation 4. Dynasty Warriors Godseekers on PlayStation 4 and Vita. And I believe that's it. Let me just take a look at my calendar here.
Just making sure.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, then let's travel over to Japan and check out some of the releases there. Biohazard 7 Resident Evil also gets its release in Japan this week. So it's a kind of a worldwide release of sorts. That's out on the 26th of January. There's also some more games on the PlayStation 4. New game, The Challenge Stage in regular and limited edition. Momo Tuji Taisen Ryoku 3 in regular and limited edition. And O no Katana no 4 Rhythm HD Edition in regular and limited edition. There's lots of limited editions in Japan. Also on the Vita, the Momotuji Taisen Ryoku 3 is also released on the Vita, as well as Shinsei Bateki Drive Girls, Black Wolves Saga Weave und Schwarz. Is out there. Throw a German name in the Japanese releases. That is also out in Japan this week on the Vita. And the new game, the challenge stage, there as well. One other game, too. Uta no Prince Sama Repeat Love. You can get that in a regular love box or princess box, if you so desire. Checking out quickly the 3DS. Nothing this week on the 3DS. I think things are slowing down on that system over there. So there's really not a lot else to mention in Japan. We could talk about the UK, though. The UK has some releases coming out there, which, what do we have on the...
Resident Evil and Sniper Ghost Warrior, it looks like.
Is that it? Yeah, it looks like it. Just Resident Evil and Sniper Ghost Warrior on the Vita this... Or, excuse me, in Europe this week. Not on the Vita, but on the PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. It's about time to get to the mailbag. Let's get to it. Every week you guys email us, participate at orangeloungeradio.com, and we open up the email bag, dive in, and pull out emails to read here on the show. Usually Dark Sakura would do this, but since she's not here, I will fill in tonight. So we're going to start with this email from Osfer, who actually had sent this a couple weeks ago, but I think we lost it in the mix-up with the mailbag last week. So, oops, sorry about that. But we're going to read it now. Who says, hello again. This email is in response to a question Rob asked me on the previous episode. He wanted to know which Final Fantasy came out when I was 12, as Bobby Blackwolf's statement is that a game typically will be a person's favorite Final Fantasy. To preface this, I mentioned that while I have fond feelings for 9, Final Fantasy X is my favorite and one of my all-time favorite video games in general. So, I'm 27 years old, my birthday is in October, so that means I would have been, well, shit, I was 12 at the time Final Fantasy X released on December 17th, 2001. Damn it, Bobby. Final Fantasy X was the first game I ever played in the series. I was introduced to it at a friend's house, and I was instantly captivated by the story, characters, and the conditional turn-based battle system. I remember after watching him play, I asked him to bring it over to my house on his next visit. That night, I stayed up past 7 a.m. playing this game. I'd fallen in love with the world of Spira, and I couldn't wait to see what turns the story would take next and how our characters would deal with a force as unstoppable as Sin. Damn, just thinking about it, I really wish Final Fantasy would return to a turn-based battle system. I like the conditional system that showed the order of attacks in X as opposed to the active time battle system in 7, but even as that system was still very fun. That brings up my question for you. Do you like 15's approach on a more Kingdom Hearts-like battle system, or would you appreciate the next Final Fantasy be more of a return to form and be turn-based? Personally, while I enjoy 15, the battle system just doesn't feel like a Final Fantasy game to me anymore. Thanks for reading, Osfer. Well, keep in mind, you can put Final Fantasy XV's battle system in what's called wait mode, which does feel a little more traditional. I actually don't prefer it. I prefer the regular battle system that is not in wait mode. I do think the game feels fine like that. It is a little jarring, and I think when I first reviewed Final Fantasy XV on this show, I kind of called it out as this feels more like a spin-off game, you know, which is what it started out as, than it does a mainline Final Fantasy game. That's not necessarily bad. I mean, spin-off games can still be great games, right? 10-2, right? It was pretty good, right? But the interesting thing about your question is that I do feel like the turn-based Final Fantasy thing is now relegated to the side games. Like, the mobile games have a lot of the turn-based stuff.
See, I like that. I don't... Yeah. I mean, I like the old battle systems.
I do, too.
I didn't think there was really anything wrong with them. And just people said that they got bored with them. And, I mean, I don't know. It just... This battle system would be good for, like, another type of game. Maybe not this. I just don't... I don't know.
World of Final Fantasy, also a very recent side story game, also a turn-based battle system in that game. So I feel like if maybe that, and actually the whole like order of who goes when and all that, actually it's different. It uses a more like progressive time bar type thing, but I think you'd, as a 10 fan, you'd find it acceptable. That actually exists in World of Final Fantasy. So I might actually encourage you, check out World of Final Fantasy, because that might be what you're looking for. There are some other weird limitations in World of Final Fantasy. Obviously, the whole like monster collecting and building the stacks, but you have to kind of build the right stacks to get the most effective stuff. I mean, there are some other complications with that. It's not just like a quote-unquote simple Final Fantasy game like 10 was to kind of just get into. But I even think I said this as well when I first reviewed 15. I would really love it if Final Fantasy 16 was a return to a 10 style game or a 9 style
yes.
game. Something that's the more traditional Final Fantasy.
It's almost like 15, they just tried too many different things. And like,
but in 15's engine was what I was going to say, was about 16, what I'd like to see.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. It just seems like, oh, hey, let's add these photo mode in there and stuff. It's like, okay, that's kind of unnecessary. I mean, I know people like that kind of stuff, but it's kind of unnecessary.
But here's the weird thing about all that. The newer Final Fantasy game in the retro setting with the pretty graphics and everything, that's actually Final Fantasy 14. And I think Final Fantasy 14 delivers on a lot of things that Final Fantasy fans would be into, but I completely understand. A lot of people are turned off to it because it's MMO monthly fee. They're not interested. But, don't write off 14 because it's a fucking marvelous. I mean, when I was playing Final Fantasy 14 this week, I finally wrapped up the story for the last patch, the 3.4 patch, which, what was it called? Was Soul Surrender, I think, was the subtitle of that? Or is that the new patch? I can't remember my patch names anymore. But I wrapped up the storyline in that patch, and it was so good. Like, oh my god, at the end of it, I was just like, wow, that was the twist they kind of did with it was really good. I was really jazzed about it, and I kind of realized, you know, I've said this about Final Fantasy Heavensward. Like, the Final Fantasy Heavensward story before, so just the 3.0 story without getting into any of the patches or whatever, it is the best Final Fantasy story for me since, like, 6. Like, it's so fucking good. And I know many Final Fantasy fans will never play it because, again, it's an MMO. So I wish there was a way Square Enix could figure out a way to make 14. I mean, then I guess it wouldn't really be 14. Like, do a free version, do the base game for free or something, and have just like NPCs you can play with or something. I don't know. I really wish they'd figure a way to do that out. But I think 14 is really, really good if you're a Final Fantasy fan. The other thing I want to say with 14, which I thought was interesting, they did talk about, you know, they've got another expansion. So this is, they're ramping down. This is the last, or the, they're doing a two-part patch to wrap up Heavensward, the last expansion, right? We got the first part, and then the second part's coming, I think, in March. And then in June, Stormblood, the new expansion, is coming. But this is something interesting Final Fantasy's doing as opposed to World of Warcraft. Instead of bundling in Heavensward, the previous expansion, with the base game, they're still going to continue to sell Realm Reborn, the base game, the way that it is, but they're bundling in Heavensward with Stormblood. So if you buy Stormblood, you're essentially buying all expansions to catch you up, which I think is interesting.
So why would you just play the base game, though?
I think the base game is there for people to try it out and see if they like it.
I guess because it's so inexpensive, like on these sales. It's like down below $10.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
For sure. For sure. Anyway, that's my thoughts on Final Fantasy and all that stuff. I think 15, it seems like it's done well enough where we will see a Final Fantasy 16, but God, who knows when? I mean, we still got that 7 remake to get through first, right? Do you think Square would be bold enough to do a Final Fantasy 16 trailer at this year's E3?
No.
I don't know. Anyway, next email is from Red the Haze, who emails us and says, "Hey, y'all, longtime listener here for, oh my gosh, 10, maybe 11 years this year." Wow, that's some dedication. Thank you so much. "I just realized it now. Well, I just wanted to send an email to congratulate Sky and Alan on their union." And I wanted to thank you very much for that. "And I wanted to thank Sky, Dark Sakura, Loki, and everyone involved, including guests and the audience, for the decade of great entertainment. More power to y'all and best wishes." Thank you so much, Red the Haze. Well, thank you for that email. Not even a question or anything, just a positive pat on the ass. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you for the well wishes on the wedding. I really, really appreciate that. One more email tonight from our good old friend Raginator. "Hi, Rob and Loki." Who knew that Dark Sakura wasn't here tonight, so he must have wrote this during the first part of the show. Yeah. Anyway, "I'd like to bring up a new question to you folks. I'm sure that the two of you, as well as most of the listeners, know of at least one or two people in their lives that is more or less anti-video games. They themselves refuse to play them and won't let their kids play them. It may be part due to the stereotype that nerds play games and they immediately go to the Revenge of the Nerds portrayal of nerds, or they possibly want to focus solely on physical activity, even if it only amounts to spinning in circles, literally. All that being said, what would you say to those notions? And Rage Engineer continues here, and we'll answer the questions. For me, I'll say this. I'm all for physical activity. God only knows I used to be on my high school's wrestling and football teams. Granted, I sucked at sports, but I digress. No one in their right mind will detract from physical exercise, but mental exercise is equally important, and video games provide that. Perhaps this is an oversimplification, but video games help develop reasoning skills, amongst other things. Essentially, all games say to the player, this is the scenario, this is your goal, and this is the tools or mechanics at your disposal. Go. It's been shown that keeping mentally active will help stave off dementia and other issues. Also, on a more personal note, I found that gaming helps dramatically with my PTSD and major depressive disorder, keeping my symptoms 97% or so at bay. In terms of the stereotype, I'm not exactly sure what to say about that, though. And that is from Ragenator. So what do you think of the notions that video games, just somebody in your life hates them? Oh, that would be your wife.
That would be my wife. Except that she likes certain video games, so that's
yeah. So it's not totally true.
But yeah, I mean, she didn't want our kids playing video games a lot, and then the kids started annoying the shit out of her, and now she's just like, just go do something else. I don't care what you're doing, which includes video games.
Well, here's the thing, Ragenator. If I'm not mistaken, based on your calls to the show previously, I believe you're in your 30s, and you're kind of close to our age. And I think the answer to this question has shifted a lot. I think when we were growing up, you know, when we were around the Nintendo and the Super Nintendo and all that stuff, I think our parents didn't have that growing up. So it was like something like weird and unknown, and they only knew what they saw about it on TV or whatever. And you know, especially in the 90s when Mortal Kombat happened and the whole violent video games that even went before, you know, Congress at one point, and that ultimately developed in the rating system that we have for video games today, because the video game industry had to police itself before the government did it for them, right? So all that stuff was crazy in the media, and so I think for that reason, video games got a certain like stereotype or stigma. But Ragenator, I really think things are kind of different now, because a lot of the people that have kids that are, you know, 9 years old, 12 years old, whatever, they grew up with video games. So, I mean, like, look at Loki. He's a parent. Loki grew up with video games, and you have, I can never remember Josh's age, six years old. But Josh is able to play a healthy amount of Minecraft, right? And he
plays an unhealthy amount of Minecraft. It's more like watches. He will watch videos as long as we'll let him watch videos. And like any time that there's screens on, he'll just like kind of gravitate towards them, like anything.
But you and that sounds like me as a kid.
And he won't shut up about Minecraft like all the time.
You and Nelly, that's as parents, you guys police that what games he should play and how long he gets to play them and all that stuff. But you have the benefit of knowing basic stuff about video games that you kind of know like the ins and outs, right? You know that it's not going
to still watches YouTubers, and YouTubers tend to swear, and then they play like violent video games on there and stuff.
I was going to say, do you let your kid play violent games?
You know, he only plays Minecraft. He only has the Wii U that he plays on, so it's basically Minecraft. That's really all he plays on is just Minecraft. Yeah. And then Mario Kart 8's on there. He will play Mario Kart 8 sometimes. He hasn't really played it in a while. And Smash is on there, so he'll play Smash. But he's not really interested in that. It's mostly Minecraft. And then he watches Minecraft mod videos from either popular MMOs or DanTDM. That's his favorite YouTubers.
But anyway, it's one of those things where it's like, again, I think the public perception has shifted a lot. And the people that are still anti-video games are the people that are our parents' age. You know, boomers. You know, people in their, you know, depending on...
Which is weird. Like, my dad's, like, so anti-video games. Yeah, he had, like, a fucking collection of ColecoVision games, like, 47 games. But, and, like, he bought me, like, a Nintendo. He bought me a Texas Instruments thing. I'm like... You are a fucking gamer. You have 47 fucking games. That's more than just a few.
There's just generational differences, and that's why we have these silly labels like boomers, like Gen X, like millennials and all this stuff, because there are just things in society that change generation to generation. I mean, look back at some of the stuff that was cool when your parents were younger. Like, they used to think sitting on flagpoles was cool and swallowing goldfish whole, right? Pet rocks. Can anyone ever explain the pet rock thing to me? That's just, you know, but then at the same time, you look at what some of the kids today are doing, and it's like, you know, now I'm starting to feel like that old man, like, you know, like, who thinks planking is funny? It's just
nobody anymore.
Exactly. It's just,
it's a fad.
There's just, yeah, exactly. There's certain trends or whatever. But the one other thing I want to point to is look at the sales of the classic NES and how Nintendo like grossly underestimated how many that was going to sell. If you want to believe that line, I'll leave that to you. They really underestimated how many moms and dads wanted these, not just for themselves, but to play with their kids, to introduce their kids to the same games that they were playing. And a lot of kids, even though the technology's dated or whatever, a lot of kids are really eating this classic NES stuff.
Yeah, my kids will always call anything that they see that's 8-bit Minecraft. They're all, that game looks like Minecraft. I'm like, no, that's just how games used to look.
And Ragenator says in our chat room, he's there in the chat room clarifying, the thing is, I know people within our own age group that are anti-video games, not just the baby boomer generation. And that's fair. You know, people are just going to – people are going to be raised the way they were raised sometimes. So there's probably going to be people that still carry that. But
sorry, my wife thinks I look weird with a VR headset on, and eventually that's going to be norms.
In my opinion, though, if you watch movies – if you do, I mean, why can't, if you play Dungeons and Dragons, although I suppose that gets a lot of negative stigma sometimes as well, but like if you do all that, why can't you play video games? Video games are not that different from movies to me. So,
yeah.
Anyway. All right. Let's see. I'm going to chat over at live.vognetwork.com. And let's see. Where is it? Kaijudo says, new pet rock is that hatchling thing. I don't even know.
What's a hatchling?
What's thing? A hatchling thing? Isn't that popular present or whatever it is?
I don't know. Yeah. It sounds stupid. It sounds like a
Christmas
Neopet
present or something, right? Yeah. It was that holiday must-have thing that, other than the classic NES, was the hatchling or whatever. Isn't that just like that candy that's banned here in America that's in other countries?
What, like, Four Loko?
No. Not, come on. I'm talking about... What's the name of that, Alan?
Kinder
eggs. Thank you, Alan. Alan knew the name of it. Kinder egg. You could, like, it was like a chocolate or something. There's like a prize in the middle, and they were afraid that kids here would choke on it.
Well, these are, yeah.
All right. Wow, chat room knows their shit. They have Kinder eggs. All right. Anyway. And that's it for emails. If you guys want to send us an email for a future week, participate at orangeloungeradio.com. But meanwhile, we have some more news to get into. Starting with Loki.
So, Super Mario Brothers Run. I know it's coming to Android soon because they have that stupid pre-order thing or pre-register or pre-notify or whatever the fuck it is. Some stupid equivalent of pre-ordering for a mobile device, which doesn't make any goddamn sense. But Nintendo announced that Super Mario Run will be coming out in March on Android. And you can, like I said, you can register for updates regarding that on Google Play Store. I will never do that. Because I don't fucking care.
Like, it's not going to do it. If you have a Twitter account, you'll know when the game's out.
Exactly. Who cares? Just, you'll know when it's supposed to come out, and you'll check it out if you want to. I may check out the free version of the game or not. I really don't. It's not something that looks interesting to me.
Again, the $10 I spent on Super Mario Run, I kind of regret. I'm just saying. So, you know, and I there's some people out there that strongly disagree with me, and that's fine. That's just my personal opinion. So, all right. Well, let's talk about Pokemon Go, and then maybe, Loki, you want to pick up Dark Saga's sure story. Pokemon Go, still going strong. I just hit level 26 of Pokemon Go not that long ago.
I haven't really been playing it that much. Very little.
I've been trying to do more walking, especially on, like, my lunch breaks, and I love that little Pokemon Go Plus. It really is incentive because I try to hatch eggs.
Are those easier to find nowadays, or are they still, like, super hard to find?
Don't think they are easy to find still.
Because that's a Nintendo product. Go fig that it's hard to find. Yeah, because they can never estimate, you know, possible consumer wants.
Well, Pokemon Go, you know, despite all the stories that say it's dead or whatever, it made a shit ton of money. I mean, the research firm App Annie has estimated that for 2006, Pokemon Go made a shit ton of money. That's actually published on the site. Shit ton. No, it isn't. It says $950 million. But that is a shit ton of money. That's almost $1 billion. So, and that's... See, that's the one downside to the fact that I do walk is that I always need those fucking incubators. And so I keep spending money on incubators. And I have had to, like, tell myself to stop. And, like, I finally got smart. I use my infinite incubator for all my 2K eggs because you can hatch more that way. And I will only use the pay ones for the 10K. and sometimes the 5K, just depending on what's in my inventory. So I have to buy less of them. But I never use a pay incubator anymore for 2K because I walk too much for it. So anyway. That is only behind Monster Strike and Clash Royale for how much money it made. Keep in mind it launched in July. So there is a Pokemon Go update that came out recently that also fixes GPS drift, apparently. I haven't really noticed the change that much, but I didn't really have a horrible problem with this to begin with. The GPS drift apparently was fixed in this most recent patch.
It would be nice if they fixed that shit in Ingress.
You can also, apparently it will show eggs that have been collected from Pokestops on the Apple Watch and some minor text fixes. But no word yet on Gen 2, unfortunately. We still don't have anything outside the eggs hatching. But I finally got my last Pokemon from Gen 2. Magmar was the last one I needed. And I got it this week. Yay! So now I have all the Gen... I even evolved... I got like 3 Togepis out of eggs, and I evolved it into a Togekic or whatever it's called. So I have like all the Gen 2 you can get in the game right now. I still don't even have all the Gen 1. I need to find some more farms. Anyhow, what else, Loki?
So Capcom is planning on more Street Fighter. So they're going to have some more announcements. They're going to be coming out around E3 and San Diego Comic-Con. No words exactly on what it's going to be, but more updates for Street Fighter V or something. One thing that he said, though, unfortunately, Rival Schools, there's no plans for anything regarding that. I guess they said despite some Easter eggs that were in Dead Rising 4. But there's a game I haven't played in a while, Dead Rising. Jeez. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. I know that they have the Street Fighter 2 game, Ultra Street Fighter 2, the Final Challengers, that's supposed to be coming out. Maybe... part of that, maybe they're going to put in, because I know Evil Ryu, I think, is probably in Street Fighter V already, but maybe like
Violent Ken. Yeah. I still think, I wish there was a little something else, like maybe one more character in Ultra Street Fighter II that wasn't just a reskin, but I also maybe understand the fact that, you know, Street Fighter II, like, was kind of done a long time ago, so maybe they don't want to, like, throw off that whole... balance by introducing another new character into a game that's like literally what 20 years old at this point.
I guess. Yeah. I don't know. Whatever. Stop remaking it then. if you want to do that, then make a new game. I don't know. Lame. All right. So apparently the next game developers conference, we know that Tim Sweeney is going to receive a lifetime achievement award. Which is pretty awesome. Tim Sweeney, of course, founder of Epic Games, created ZZT. Yeah?
Yes.
ZZT. There's a game that I'd love to see a comeback. Some new ZZT. And you know, other games. You know, of course, he helped develop Unreal, Gears of War, the Unreal Engine. And I guess the Game Developers Choice Awards will be... on Wednesday, March 1st, from 6:30 to 8:30 Pacific Standard Time. So, that's pretty awesome. He deserves it. ZZT is awesome.
Will you be able to watch that online, you said?
I think you should be able to, yeah.
Wow. I sometimes forget to make that connection that it's the same guy who made ZZT who also has a hand in all these newer games. So, I mean, definitely a lifetime of accomplishments in the game industry. So, a well-deserved award. In my opinion. And again, I can't say enough good things about ZZT. I wish it would make a comeback as well, but I guess it would be hard in this day and age. That'd be a great game on the Switch.
Yeah, I think it would be.
All right. Well, lastly tonight, before we get to the Skype line and your calls, that orange...
It'd be awesome, actually, to totally interrupt you here.
Sure.
ZZT on Steam with Steam Workshop support for levels. That
I like
would be
that.
Fucking awesome.
But in the meantime, we have Frog Fractions 2. Anyhow, lastly tonight, before we get to the Skype line at Orange Lounge Radio, a brand new cooking show that appeals to gamers made its debut in South Korea. That's right. It's a South Korean World of Warcraft cooking show aired on TV this week. Yeah, no, this really happened. It aired, I think, just yesterday, and it's called Wow Recipe, The Meal is Ready. At least that's what the title translates to. And it stars Choi Hun-suk, Hopefully I pronounced that right. Sorry. A famous chef who appears on South Korean television. But in this particular show, this guy happens to be a WoW player. So he cooks dishes called Murloc Soup and Hellhound Sweet and Sour Fish while the guests in the studio share stories from and about the game. I actually think that's kind of awesome. Like, as much as we can sit here and kind of joke, like, LOL WoW cooking show, I mean, we sit here and talk about video games as we're talking about food. So,
well, yeah, there's one I watched.
This is kind of the perfect TV show.
I found it thanks to Reddit. There was a and I now, of course, I don't remember what the series is. I have to look at my phone here real quick. But there was a cooking show for, like, based off TV and movies, like different recipes or, like, dishes that are in there. They're like, well, how would they make it? Like, one of the ones that they did was a turkey burger from Parks and Rec, where they had the burger cook-off thing. So they made the Ron Swanson burger, which is just meat and bun. And then they made the other turkey burger thing with, like, all the fancy stuff on it. And the guy's like, oh, actually, it's pretty good.
You know, there's a cooking channel on Twitch now, so why not? And an eating channel.
What was it? It was
wait, is there a cooking channel on Twitch, or am I mixing it up with the eating channel? I think I'm mixing it up with the eating channel. I don't think they're, but I'm sure now that they have with the whole IRL thing, I'm sure you could do a cooking show on Twitch and get away with it, and you wouldn't, you know, get shut down if you were themed like this particular show is. So, SSGO 100 Matt says it sounds like The Dish, where they talk about stuff and cook. Yeah, I think a show like this would work great in America. I mean, I don't know if it would show on cable television or whatever, but at the same time, like, it sounds like, not that I would know firsthand, just based on what I've heard, it sounds like it would be great stoner TV. Like, let's talk about video games and food. I think there's an audience for that out there, you guys. It's just untapped. I don't know. Anyway, Loki, did you find the name of what you were looking for?
No. I think it's Andrew Ray. I have to check, take a look here. Yeah, it's Andrew Ray. It's called Binging with Babish. And so, like, they do Kevin's Famous Chili from The Office. They had the Eggs Woodhouse from Archer, and that is fucking disgusting. It's just so heavy. I kind of want to use it, though.
All right, we are going to open up the Skype line right now. You can give us a call if you want to talk about anything we've talked about so far tonight, or perhaps you have something new you'd like to discuss. Orange Lounge Radio, all one word on Skype. You can also do the old-fashioned way if you must, 1-877-GAME-OLR. But the phone lines are already ringing at Orange Lounge Radio on Skype, so let's get to it. Hi, on Orange Lounge Radio, who's this?
It's Ron, so everyone take a drink.
Hey, I will do that. Here we go. Drink. Oh, except I only have water. Boring.
It's okay. It's all good.
No Stroop Waffle tonight.
You got married, so okay. You already did your drinking, so it's all good.
Maybe a little bit. We actually a funny story. I got to tell this aside because it was one of the moments that really got me about the whole wedding. Right. So, you know, we did this as a surprise. We didn't tell anybody, and in a very 2017 sort of way, we just knew there's really no other way to announce it. We told everybody on Facebook because that's just the society we live in, right? It's a great way to get news out instantly. So the reason why I say that is that it was really a surprise to pretty much everybody we knew. But Alan and I actually, we made reservations because we did this at the courthouse downtown, and then we made reservations at a really fancy French place to, you know, have dinner as a married couple for the first time because we knew we weren't going to do any big reception. Well, when we get to the French restaurant, a friend of mine that I was doing Rocky Horror with here in Sacramento happened to be there. And yeah, she was like, you guys are dressed up fancy. What's happening? And I was like, well, actually, we just got married. And she kind of did that whole, like, what? You know, and that whole thing and the surprise. Well, the reason why I tell this story, we ended up getting the table next to them. But obviously, you know, we didn't really intrude on whatever they were doing, and they didn't really intrude on us. But we exchanged pleasantries, and they were very nice, the table, and offering their congratulations and all this stuff. Well, anyway, come the end of the night, the waiter brings by some complimentary champagne and says, on the house. And we were like, oh, okay, we don't, you know, Alan especially really doesn't drink at all. But, you know, wedding night, you can make an exception. And, you know, I was driving, so I only had a little bit. But then we were like, okay, we're ready to pay the bill. And he said, oh, your friends at the other table already took care of it. And I was like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. Like, in, like, the greatest way. Like, I think we let out our first married couple joint gay gasp in unison. It turns out my friend and their party there at the table paid the bill for us. And they got the last surprise in on my wedding day.
That's pretty amazing.
That's pretty fucking awesome, huh? I gotta say, that's a gesture I won't soon forget. And it's one of those things where it's like it's like impossible to pay back. You know what I mean? So I will have to pay it forward on some unsuspecting married couple in the future.
Sounds like a plan, but I got a quick story about that, then I'll talk about what I wanted to call in about.
Yeah.
Let's go to the pre-Facebook days, around the time of MySpace. I'm living with my older sister and her then family, whatever. So I get up, get dressed, go to work, and I see her all dressed up with her husband, now husband. And I'm like, where y'all going? They're like, oh, we're going out for lunch, whatever. I'm just like, fine, whatever. I go to school, go to work, come back. My sister-in-law is stewing at the desk. I'm just like, who pissed in your cornflakes? And she's like, didn't you hear what happened? No. Your sister and my brother got married today. I'm like, what do you mean they got married? They went down to the courthouse and got married. And I'm just sitting there like, well, that explains why they were all dressed up this morning, huh?
That's funny. So you knew that you'd seen them dressed up, but they just like, oh, we're going to lunch. Oh, okay. No biggie. That's funny. That's a good story. No, nobody saw us leaving the house since Alan and I live alone, don't have any roommates anymore. We just, you know, went and did our thing. There were a lot of other couples there, though. Ironically, another, like an older, but another gay couple was doing the same thing we were doing.
That is Hope Rutgers.
Yeah, they wished us congratulations, and we did the same. But there was a variety of couples there. There was a very young-looking couple getting married as well with a few of their family members. But anyway, Mawidge, we could talk all night.
Yeah. Now let's talk the Switch real quick.
Sure.
Now, I don't know if you know, but there are some gaming laptops out there where you can buy a dock for it. And in this dock, you can add a standard desktop video card and give it more power.
Hmm.
There's talk of some docks where you can do that. You can add more RAM or another hard drive and stuff like that, hot swapping to make it give it more power when you're at home. I can see them doing something like that with the Switch. Because I had a feeling the dock was just two USBs, an additional chipset to give it more power and more memory. Now, I can see this happening. If reports are coming out saying that the Switch is not powerful enough to run next-gen games or whatever, I can see Nintendo coming up with a dock that can do all of this and then some.
You must have been the one that was talking about this, where, because I just brought this up with Loki during part A or something about this whole fact that they could upgrade the dock to do like maybe some more power or whatever. But Loki didn't seem to think that would really happen with Nintendo.
No, it's not going to happen. And the system that you're thinking of is like one of the Razer systems that they have, which are way overpriced in the first place. And the performance out for those, you know, docked units, it's just not the same as, you know, it actually being an integrated card. It's just not the bus isn't as fast. Besides, you're going to be paying like way too much money for that anyways. They've already confirmed that there's no additional hardware in that dock to enhance anything. It's just literally the output is changing for the TV, because there's no point in, you know, outputting higher than 720, because that's all the screen supports on the portable. And I would be willing to bet, you know, I haven't looked at it yet. And actually, one of the things last night I was thinking about, I was like, how much would it cost to make like a Switch-like device that actually is a PC that I can run PC games on? Because that's kind of what I want to do anyways. And so I started thinking about it a little bit, and it probably would be pretty expensive. But, you know, the way I would have done a dock is basically just had like an HDMI and power make some sort of exposed like contacts, and then when you shove it into the dock, then it makes those connections and everything. And I haven't gotten a close-up look at the dock, but I'm guessing that's probably how it works, since I would think that, you know, having a plug or something sitting inside there might break that or might break the connection. So that would just make the most sense to me. But there's no additional processing within that unit, within the dock. Not even any additional cooling either.
Oh, I kind of figured as much. But that one, the laptop you're talking about, it's not Razer, if it is them. It's brand new, but I know it's Alienware that has that.
Oh, so. Okay. Well, whatever. I think expensive right. computers and Razer comes to mind.
Well, Alienware would be up there, too.
Yes, Alienware, they're also ridiculous expensive computers.
Yeah, well, most Razer laptops look like really fancy MacBook Pros that run with Windows 10.
You know, something I've been thinking about, though, and I guess this doesn't directly relate to the dock thing, but it does a little bit, is that I really think a lot of people are kind of underestimating this potential, and maybe I'm overthinking it, I don't know, but of the Windows 10 game mode and this whole thing that's coming where they're going to allow more of your computer processing power to be dedicated to games. I would think that this is really going to put PCs in line with what we see Project Scorpio is going to end up being capable of. And yet there's this whole ecosystem of you can buy the game once and you get it on both, you know, Xbox One and Windows 10 or whatever. It's almost like Project Scorpio, whatever that ends up being, is going to be your dock in a way. I don't know. It's just something weird I've been thinking about. But I'm really curious what a game changer, wink nod, game mode is going to be in Windows 10.
Well, I can't say this much about Project Scorpion. Modular.
Hmm. That's usually why people stay away from PCs and go to consoles, is because of the whole modular thing. So it'd be weird if they did that.
But here's the thing, yeah. PCs are modular. It doesn't take much to do upgrades, but it does take a lot of thought and requirement if you really want to do proper upgrades or whatever. The way I see Scorpius going with modular upgrades, it's going to say on there, compatible with this, it's going to work. They're going to keep it simple as possible. Mm-hmm. Need more RAM? Slap a module in. Simple as that. They're going to try to make it as simple as possible.
I don't think they're going to do that. And honestly, I think it's just going to be just a simple setup where they sell a console. And it wouldn't make any sense anyways, because the first thing you're going to have happen, especially now that it's Windows 10 stuff, you have a lot of these games that are Xbox One that run on Windows 10, especially if you're looking at first-party titles. I mean, of course, someone's going to, once the specs come out for this and the price, they're just going to be like, okay, what kind of PC can I build for that same amount of money? Spec-wise, and I'm sure that they'll be able to come up with something that's more powerful than it. It's just, I don't know. I had to see what enhancements this is actually going to offer for the price. And I doubt that it would go modular, because what's the point at that point? I mean, why wouldn't you just buy a PC at that point? And for the average consumer, that doesn't make any sense either, because they're not going to understand how to upgrade a system.
Well, I mean, I know I've talked to a lot of people who talk about how to build their computers and so forth. And for some, it's easy, and others, it's quite overwhelming. So I get it. I mean, you could spend $400 to build a pretty decent gaming PC, or you could spend $400 on a powerful console. Everything is set. Grab it, plug, and go. It's just what it boils down to. People, console players, you want to keep it simple as possible.
All right, well, we'll see. We got E3 is gonna unveil a lot, I think, in that regard. I think Microsoft will pour a lot into E3, so we'll see. But anyway, Rama, I'm gonna let you go so we can get more calls, okay?
Cool, no problem, dude.
All right, Anime Jam Session. Everybody listen.
Damn right.
All right, take care, my friend.
You too.
Bye. All right, Skype line's lit tonight. Let's get to the next call. Hi, you are on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hi, this is YYR.
Hey, my friend. Ooh, you're echoing just a little bit, but hopefully Skype will equalize there. But what's on your mind, my friend?
Sorry if there's echoing. It's because I'm in my dining room and there isn't much on the walls yet.
Ah, okay. That makes sense. So what's up?
Well, first of all, I wanted to say congratulations to you and Alan. Welcome to the club.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's right. You got married just within the past year, too. You were here right after your wedding. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful, and I hope you guys have many, 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 many years of bliss.
Thank you. We'll try.
And I will say this much on the thing you just talked about, as far as why I don't think game mode is going to be a game changer. Universal Windows Platform. You did hear, right?
Oh, yeah, that's a fair point.
It's limited to UWP apps. Mm. So until the Windows Store is less of a piece of crap, I don't think it's going to really gain much traction.
All right. Fair perspective. Well, what did you want to call in tonight about before you heard that?
Well, you know what? I wanted to mention something that has pretty much flown under the radar because it's very niche news, But fortunately, it's in our niche. So I think it's very appropriate that you guys all know about this. Mm. Have you heard of the Konami Arcade Championship?
I feel like yes, because you brought it up before. But otherwise, no, it's not something I've been actively following.
Okay, well, this is the sixth year that Konami has run this. It's basically a yearly tournament for all of their Bimani games.
Okay.
And they hold preliminaries over eAmusement on pretty much all the Bimani games, 2DX, Sound Voltex, what have you. And people compete in the preliminaries just by playing the game and playing the songs out of the qualifying folder. And when the qualifiers are all done, basically the top players get an all-expenses-paid trip to Tokyo where they compete in the finals.
Okay.
Well, interestingly enough, you may recall that this past year was the first year that we have ever had a version of DDR released in North America officially with eAmusement.
Right, with DDR Ace and the fact that round ones mm-hmm. have them, right?
And so North America was officially added as a competition region for the Konami Arcade Championships in DDR Ace.
I feel like there's a punchline coming.
Well, California's own Chris Chike, a.k.a. I Am Chris for Life, and Jeff Lloyd, a.k.a. Funga, have qualified first and second place overall, as well as a third person who I don't know personally, and they will all be flying to Japan next month to represent us in the finals, which will be streamed live in February over Konami's website.
Oh, there's no punchline. This is good news.
This is great news.
I was expecting some huge Konami fuck-up as a punchline. Like, that's the day and age that we live in. We're like, oh, the scores got deleted, or Konami rendered it ineligible, or the machines deleted themselves. I was expecting some colossal Konami fuck-up as a punchline, and there's not one. This story has a happy ending.
No, this is amazing. I'm really looking forward to this. I hope to pass this along to some major gaming websites and see if they pick up on it, because I feel like this is a story you're not going to hear very often. I mean,
well,
first of all,
you never know.
DDR's kind of an e-sport already.
There's some that listen to this show that might pluck it, but we'll see. I know you're out there. Say hi sometimes.
It's not every day you see North Americans flying to, you know, the host country to challenge their best at their own game. And, I mean, they're all friends anyway, but it's going to be amazing to watch.
Yeah, that'll be great. I mean, and finally, here we are in 2017, and Konami is finally kind of recognizing the global audience of DDR. That's fucking fantastic. God, I wish it had been that way when we started this show 15 years ago, but c'est la vie.
And having spoken to both of the, you know, number one and number two players at MAGFest, they were both there trying Kyle Ward's new game. Did you get to try it? I hope you did.
Here's the thing. On my flight over there, I kind of fucked up my leg. So I had a problem, like, kind of walking around. No. So I didn't really get to – I did, like, basic steps on – okay, because there was a fucking solo fourth mix, and I can't not play solo. So I played lightly – but there were so many crowds around Step Maniacs. I did not play myself. However, my good pal, Jonko, who used to be on a show called Koopa Club, we're really good friends now, and we were there. I watched him play. He's still really good at those music games. He can, you know, his feet flying and all that stuff. I can't keep up with him in my advancing age. But I watched him play, so I feel like I got a good sense of the game because I stood there and I watched, like, oh, it's a touch screen. I see. Kyle kind of took the re-rave cabinet and did something new with it.
I was thrown by that, too.
Yeah, so that was, I kind of like that. So it was really hard to hear.
Already there were Matrix Walk jokes.
Yeah. No more of that, huh? It was really hard to hear in the songs themselves, but I certainly caught that. Not only did he get to pluck some of the very classic DDR songs, I caught some Captain Jack in there. But you know, kind of like, and this was always the case with not just In the Groove, but then his later stuff, like Re-Rave, where it's like, oh, there's an erotic song, a Smile DK song, you know. Kyle's very self-aware and clearly must have some sort of Konami's blessing / we won't sue you / 10% of the profits type thing that allows this.
Well, you know,
game
I did ask him about that.
I would be shocked if he can talk about it.
Well, basically what he said to me was it was discussed. But beyond that, he said he couldn't tell me. He was not at liberty to tell me. So what I gather from that is that they did discuss something and he's under NDA right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's understandable. There, they've worked something out, but the terms he can't disclose. I mean, that's a business deal. It's, you know, that's.
Which says to me that maybe that's good news. So.
Oh, I think it is. I think I mean, I don't know. I just need to invite him back on the show when he's ready. He might not be ready to talk about the whole thing yet, but when he's ready, we can get everything firsthand. But, I anticipate he's going big with this, and he, you know, even in just interviewing him on our show, it was probably 2 or 3 years ago at this point. Same year as PAX East Boston. So that was 2014, right? So,
sounds right.
Yeah. So it was a little over 2 years ago. So, he's definitely learned a lot from the legal perspective than what we were talking years ago. So I think the man knows how to cross his T's and dot his I's. So.
Yeah. And just to finish up, I'll just say, having talked to both Chris and Jeff at MAGFest, they're hoping that Konami uses, you know, this opportunity to have the North Americans come and compete at the highest level over there. Mm-hmm. They're hoping that that will encourage Konami to expand their offerings further to North America. Mm. So I hope that's what comes out of it too.
That would be great. And they get JD actually clarifies it was May 3rd, 2015. It really took that long. I thought it was my years are blending together at this point. I guess it was 2015 that was PAX East.
I know how you feel.
It's just a blur. Yeah, that makes sense because my first MAG was 2016 and I switched to MAG from PAX East, which I would have gone to in 2015. All right, makes sense. It makes sense. Don't fucking bring facts into this, JD. I hate it when you do that. All right. Let me put this out, though, because I want to – I think this is an important point. I want to get your perspective on this, being a big music game fan and being one of the people that really convinced me to give MAG a try. There's a lot of rumor and – well, not even rumor. Just we all see what's happening on Reddit between MAGFest and Tokyo Attack. And Tokyo Attack has pretty much said, we're out for next MAGFest. Not happening. So what's your reaction to that whole thing, being a music game fan?
Well, I did talk to Anthony while I was there. Anthony is the head of Tokyo Attack. Mm-hmm. And he said that, MAGFest's organization has gotten to be very complex, as you would expect when it's, you know, grown to the size that it has.
Well, it's splintering now, too. I mean, I'm just saying it's, you know, we're going to have MAG West this year. They have traveling MAG shows. They have the tiny MAG show they still do. I mean, there's all these MAG spinoffs. So definitely there's a lot of parts to the machine.
Definitely. Many more than there used to be. And basically he said that it's been, you know, it's been difficult to coordinate and to deal with the various heads of the Hydra, much more so now than it used to be, and he's gotten frustrated with it. So, and you know, it's his company, and he, you know, has the right to make those kind of decisions, and I respect that.
Sure.
And I know that definitely there'll be some holes in the lineup if they're gone. I know that they brought Beatstream, they brought Sound Voltex and Museka and Bishibashi, as they usually do, and many other very niche, very unique games. But that being said, if you go just by the number of machines that were there, the number of Pump and DDR and, you know, just music games in general, even U-Beat, I would say Tokyo Attack wasn't even 50% of it, probably closer to 30 to 40. And so if they're not there, it's not like you won't still see 10 DDR machines, right? You know?
MAG has
you
a year
not
to figure it
get
out.
All of the games, mm-hmm. but there will still be plenty of music games there.
I hope Tokyo is still in. I mean, I know this doesn't do you Northeasterners a lot of good unless you travel, but I still hope Tokyo Attack has a relationship with Dragon Con, because that was a great addition to Dragon Con last year. So we'll see. It's not on their calendar yet, but I don't think they have a lot past like the first couple months of the year.
Well, I mean, Anthony wasn't talking about, well, I'm done with conventions. He only specifically mentioned MAGFest. So honestly, sure. I don't think it'll affect Dragon Con or Otakon or any of the other conventions that they've been doing regularly.
Well, yeah, and they are confirmed for MomoCon, which is, you know, kind of the sister convention now in Atlanta. And what was the other thing I was going to say? Oh, yeah, they took that setup right over to the other side of DC where Awesome Games Done Quick was doing their thing, like right as MAG was ending. So...
they're very good at what they do.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Anyway, my friend, I'm going to let you go so we can wrap up. But thanks for your call.
Hey, you're welcome. And congratulations again. And I hope you guys all have a great week.
Thank you. You too. Take care, my friend.
Yep, take care.
All right. I think that is going to do it for the Skype line tonight. I'm sorry for those that didn't get through tonight, but you can always send us an email over at participate@orangeloungeradio.com. But we are about done for the night, unless I do need to check in and see if Loki has any last-minute stories.
I do have a couple last-minute stories, actually.
Please, go for it.
So I guess it's only makes sense since VR is now a thing, but apparently a VR film company is rebooting the movie series Lawnmower Man. And it's going to be only viewable in a VR headset. So they're developing a new series based on that. I'm not sure if that's going to be like a TV series, movies, or something like that. But they're going to be like VR movies now. So that'd be kind of cool to see. Excited about that. Lawnmower Man 2 was not so good, but, you know. It's got its nostalgia. And then I wanted to mention Games Done Quick did $2.2 million this year. So that's raised quite a bit of money, and I got to watch quite a bit of that. That's what I was doing in between playing games. So I'm probably going to check out more of those on-demand videos for that as well. And finally, EA's Patrick Soderlund, he had made a comment regarding Nintendo Switch and basically saying, "I spoke only about FIFA today, but our company's structure let us release all sorts of games for every platform. So we'll go wherever the gamers go. I think Nintendo Switch will put Nintendo at the forefront of the game industry once again. Their approach is quite different from anything they've done in the past. They've listened to EA, Activision, and other companies since the beginning of the Switch's development. So we've been involved through the whole process. They teamed up with us because they wanted to guarantee the console would be a success. Doing business with Nintendo is very important to us. We'd like to bring more and more games over for everyone." So maybe third parties are on board. But all I'm saying right now is based off of what I've seen them announce, I'm not entirely convinced yet.
Hmm. And based on what YYR says in chat, I kind of tend to agree, where YYR says, "I take this EA statement to mean the same as last time on Wii U. If people buy it, we will come. And last time didn't happen."
Yeah. All right. And let's see. What else? That's pretty much it, sadly.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for another episode of Orange Lounge Radio. Thank you guys so much for listening to the show tonight. We appreciate all the support. As a reminder, you can leave us a nice 5-star review on a place like iTunes or Google Play or what have you. That stuff goes a very long way. We really appreciate it. Also, you know, we don't ask for your money here on the show. So you can always spread us via word of mouth. It goes a long way. Tell a friend or two about the show because we can't... you know, have an audience and voices to hear from if they're not here to share them. So, but that's going to do it. Hooray. We made it through the show without a power outage. Although I think the rain like kind of stopped. Like it was,
yeah, it was weird. Like last night, if we were doing the show, that would have been kind of iffy because it was like 50, 60 mile an hour winds.
Okay. The wind woke me up at 4 a.m. I don't know if you saw. Okay. So you know how the storms last week blew our fence over?
Oh, I didn't know that.
So they fixed it. And now last night, the other half of it blew over. Yeah, it was bad. Like it was like almost like hurricane. I'm sure some of you East Coasters are like, "That's nothing." But keep in mind, you know, California isn't built with that kind of weather in mind. So, you know, 60 mile an hour winds is a pretty fucking big deal. And it's, yeah, fucked up the fence.
I thought it was done raining this morning, but apparently it started raining again.
It's supposed to be like off and on thunder. It's supposed to be like moist and unstable, just like me, through tomorrow, through Monday. And then finally like sun for a week. So... that'll be nice. Nice little break here. So, speaking of in a week, we will see you back here in a week, in 7 days, where we will do another episode of Orange Lounge Radio, talk about whatever happened in gaming that week. Hopefully, maybe we can get another interview for you guys. Dark Sakura should be back in 7 days. And lots of bright sunshine finally, so maybe we can get outside and play more things like Pokemon Go and the outdoor games. But for now, we're going to do it. We're going to end this episode of Orange Lounge Radio and say we'll see you in 7 days. Have a great week, everybody. Thanks, Matt Baum, for being here tonight. Thank you guys for being here tonight in chat or via the podcast. We'll see you next time here at Orange Lounge Radio. Bye.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or Vog Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.